Ladies and gentlemen, I now call this December 2nd meeting of the Board of Supervisors to order. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much. All righty. Do we have an adoption of the agenda?
So made.
Do we have a second, Ms. Eager?
Second.
Motion's been made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Eager. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We have Mr. O'Brien and Ms. Booker absent. I'm sure Ms. Booker will be here momentarily. All righty. County Administrator's report, Mr. Dahl.
Yep, Mr. Sheridan, Mr. Chair, thank you very much. It's got a few things to report on. Let's see here. So the Thomas Jefferson Health District is offering another free drive-through and walk-up COVID-19 testing for anyone in the community over the age of six. Fluvanna County Public Schools were nice enough to let us use their facilities. It's going to be Wednesday, December 16th. From 5 to 7 p.m. and it's going to be at the Fluvanna County High School bus loop. That's at 1918 Thomas Jefferson Parkway. Again, if you want to get a guaranteed spot, please make an appointment on December 14th or 15th and call between the hours of 8 and 4:30. They have 50 walk-in and drive-up tests available, but like I said, you can walk up as well. And just kind of as we're looking at, just some testing results and kind of what's going on in the county, I know Dr. Bonds from the Thomas Jefferson Health District was here a couple meetings ago to kind of discuss where we are with current testing in the county. As we're kind of looking at, looking at the daily case incident rate per 100,000, the trend's been going up slightly, but when you look at percent positivity, which is based upon a 14-day cycle, it's going down a little bit. Now, the only thing to say about some of these results, and they're kind of taking the rolling results here from these three dates, with the holiday kind of being in play, the information that they got from November 30th, that was a metric from November 21st, so pre-Thanksgiving. I think the next time I provide this information to the board, it'll probably be more current and up to date. Like I said, this was the most recent that they had when they sent it. They sent out these weekly pandemic reports weekly. In an effort to kind of do things a little differently this year with COVID-19, normally we have big gatherings at Pleasant Grove Park with the tree lighting and lots of people there, and Mr. Spitzer and his team wanted to still make sure that we had some type of holiday celebration. So what they had talked about doing is the Pleasant Grove Park's Community of Light celebration. They're looking for local businesses, churches, organizations, groups, scouts, whatever, to set up light displays throughout Pleasant Grove Park. If you remember from the where the Pleasant Grove Park is, there's kind of the dirt road that goes around the house, that goes kind of around Pleasant Grove House, goes behind there and comes up by the Farm Heritage Museum. The idea is to have a big kind of light parade set up where different individuals can set up light displays that would be approved by Parks and Rec in advance. So, like I said, they're starting this. We're anticipating to do this for December 18th and 19th. He's still looking for more individuals and groups to set up some type of light displays. And like it would be, people could just kind of drive through and see what's going on. There would be a Santa there, and they'd have some festivities happening. Some staffing updates. We've had a few changes, and I haven't done this in a little while, and so I just wanted to kind of give an update. We've had a few promotions from existing staff. You remember Brad Robinson, senior planner, he left. Jason Overstreet, who was planner GIS technician, moved up to senior planner. Ashley Hunter in communications, she was on the communications team. She now has become a communications team lead. And then we have three new employees that have started within the past 2-3 weeks. Michael Sharp, the facility maintenance technician for Public Works, he started November 16th. Karen Terrell, Human Services Assistant 3 for the Department of Social Services, started November 23rd. And Kimberly Becker, the financial services technician, started, it was November 30th, just last week here. And then just a couple little bits of guidance. I know I've talked to the board about this regarding cigarette tax. There's been some work groups happening, kind of behind the scenes. If you remember, legislation was passed in 2020 authorizing counties to impose cigarette taxes beginning July 1, 2021. Localities can levy up to a 40% of 40 cents per pack. If you remember as well, there are lots of localities that were interested in looking at this. And at the last meeting, the board said, go ahead, take a look at it, get some more information on it. After some work group meetings, a lot of surrounding localities expressed interest in kind of doing this in a regional approach. There's some, as far as stamping and taxing the cigarettes, it was kind of looked at of doing maybe some type of regional cigarette taxing authority or something like that. Just looking at some estimates for Fluvanna and looking at kind of what some other cities are doing, possible Fluvanna revenue estimates could be anywhere between $150,000 and $200,000 dollars a year annually. I think that's a pretty conservative figure. And some of that information we've taken, some other localities have done some population and annual revenue estimates and trying to factor in what is a good per pack, per capita amount. But anyway, that's a very conservative estimate for Fluvanna County. Again, it wouldn't begin until July 1, 2021. Does the board still have interest in moving forward? Is this something you want staff to look into to have ready to go in the budget? And I can bring this forward to something more formally. I'm just wondering how the board wants to move forward with this.
Which localities
are involved?
Sorry, Patricia.
So a lot of the work group meetings, Almoral County's been involved. They're interested. Louisa County, Orange County, Greene County, Madison County. Those are kind of some of the surrounding counties that have been in some of these meetings, Orange County, and have expressed interest. Now, it all has to be approved by their boards before we move forward. But since there's a little bit of a process in place, for instance, I'll give you an example. The city of Charlottesville taxes cigarettes right now. Right now, they have it being implemented through their treasurer's office. Their treasurer's office does it. Some other localities, they have it implemented. In cities, they have it implemented through the Commissioner of Revenue's office. Looking at a lot of these counties, some of the counties' thoughts were, if we did this at more of a regional approach, having one kind of entity kind of taking this over and kind of administering it, would be more streamlined, and there'd be some economies of scale. But anyway, as we're ramping up into the next year's budget, just trying to get an idea from the board how we want to move forward with this. Like I said, I'm happy to sit in more meetings and get more information on it, but really the next big piece of it is one, if there is going to be some type of regional approach, what does that look like? And then secondly, does the board really want to move forward and adopt something like this? And I'm assuming, Mr. Payne, this would have to be adopted by ordinance, and then there'd be some other legal things the county would have to do.
Well, right off the top of my head, it impressed me that that you've got two different stages here. They can be run concurrently. Yeah. Two different things you have to do. One is to adopt an ordinance imposing the tax, and the second one is to take some action to formulate an agreement of some
correct
sort with the regional bunch to handle some of the administration of it. And some of those require an ordinance, some of them don't. So if you had it as a joint exercise of powers, you would have to have an ordinance. If you did it by contract, you would just have to have the board approve. I don't know what others have in mind, so I can't tell you which I think is.
Ms. Ingrid, did you have something you wanted to ask?
I think if we were going to do it regionally, then just a carton of cigarettes will just be $4 more than it was before. But I think that if the region is going to do it, I think we should join in with the region.
Ms. Volker, Mr. E.
I don't have any problem with that.
I don't either.
Okay. Done, three headlines.
Yeah. So I'll work with Mr. Payne, and like I said, I'll still continue to sit in on some of these work group meetings, discussing that the board has interest in kind of moving forward in some type of regional approach.
With that last sheet that he has right there, because it was just cities that could do that.
Correct.
So that's why it's only 10.
Yeah, this was as of June 30th, 2019, and this gives you actual revenues that cities, I didn't include towns. There's only two counties that allow it right now, and that was Arlington and Fairfax County. But they had some pretty high revenues. But anyway, on the low end here, I mean, if you look at the city of Covington, they have a population of 5,700 people, and they collect close to $95,000 a year in taxes.
I'm looking at Fairfax, which is 24,000.
Yep.
And they're collecting 600,000.
Yeah, you know, the city of...
And Waynesboro is another one. I look down there at Waynesboro, it's
yep
very similar to us. 22,000, and they're right under 500,000.
Yeah, the city of Charlottesville, for instance, we were in a meeting, and the treasurer for the city of Charlottesville was talking about it. And they said that the revenue has been going down a little bit over the years, just because people are becoming more aware. But again, they have about 50,000 people, and they collect $670,000 a year.
And they know if they drive another half a mile, they can go into the county and don't pay.
Well, and that's the thing. Albemarle County doesn't have it, so you know Albemarle County is considering it. So if the region kind of did it, it would kind of make it where people's not, you know, someone's not going right over the county line to buy cigarettes there. Whereas if it was more of a regional approach, but anyway, I'll continue to move forward with that and have that ready for budget time.
Wouldn't it be nice if we said the ad tax will have more people to stop smoking because it's a health issue instead of looking at it and saying, oh, we can make some money for this. I mean, we're not, I'm just exaggerating.
That's exactly what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
This is what I would say people have characterized in the past as a syntax.
Mm-hmm. And we're doing it to, maybe people can't afford it and have to try to stop.
It makes revenue in the meantime. It's,
yeah.
And then one other revenue item. So Ms. Treadway from the clerk of the court, she brought something forward that there is an amendment in the that the General Assembly approved regarding Virginia Code 53.1-120, which allows for courthouse security fees to be increased from right now the county. And previously, it allowed up to $10 that may be charged for each criminal or traffic case in which the defendant is convicted of a violation. The Code of Virginia now allows up to a $20 fee. Again, if we went forward with that, that would equate to roughly $20,000 to $25,000 a year in annual revenue. Like I said, it was $10, and that's what currently the county is doing, but it has increased to $20. Again, if we move forward with something like this, we'd have to do a public hearing and have some ordinance change, but it would be very minor. But is this something that the board wants staff to move forward with and bring formal stuff forward?
I would.
You said yes, Ms. Booker?
Yeah.
No, okay.
Mr. Weaver?
Well, they're always looking for more money. Why don't we just skip it off?
Okay, so you had two no's already, so it doesn't matter.
Okay.
That one's, we're going to stay at 10.
Okay. And then again, you know, just for the public that's out there, different ways to get county information through the website, through fan mail, through Facebook, and through Twitter. And then some of your upcoming meetings. So December 16th at 4 p.m., there is a nonprofit work session at 4. And then also at December 16th, you have a 7 p.m. regular meeting going over regular business. Your next meeting after that is January 6th. It's a 4 p.m. meeting. That's your 2021 organizational meeting, which is a regular meeting. This year, we don't have to change the date because it falls on a date that doesn't fall right on New Year's or anything like that, or remotely close. And then going back to January 20th is your next meeting after that. Again, we have a 4 p.m. budget work session for nonprofit presentations. And then January 20th, you have a 7 p.m. regular meeting again. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that the board has.
Any questions?
Nope.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Mr. Dalton. We'll now open our first round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium. State your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time? Do we have anyone on the phone?
Yes, this is Rudy Garcia.
Yes, sir, Mr. Garcia.
Hello.
Yes, sir, we got you. Go ahead.
Hi, Ms. Rudy Garcia, 802 Ravanna Woods Drive, Fort Union, Virginia, 23055. I'm speaking to you today as my role as chamber president on two issues. The first is to remind the Board of Supervisors that our chamber annual meeting is going to be held by Zoom this year, and it will be on Monday at 7 o'clock. Each of you should have received an invitation to that. If you haven't, please let me know and I'll make sure you get one. At that meeting, we will be announcing our business of the year and emerging business of the year. In addition, we'll be given an annual report on where the chamber is and what's transpired since COVID hit and change we've made in the group. The second thing I'd like to address is the fact that I was able to sit in with Supervisor Sheridan and Supervisor Booker with the Yay Wellness meeting last week before last year. And I took it back to my executive committee, and they agreed that they would like to support, issue a letter of support for Yay Wellness. So we reached out to our membership. We had about a dozen businesses signify to us that they were in total support and to please put them down as co-signatories on our letter. And then we had about another three or four businesses that wrote letters on their own. More importantly, I shared that with some of our other constituents across the county, and we have one citizen who went out and spoke to a number of residents in the Bremo and Fort Union area, and I believe he received over 50 signatures. So there seems to be pretty widespread support in the community for the Yay Wellness business as it's coming in. So I just wanted to share that with you because I know you'll be deliberating on that shortly. And I hope everyone has a really great holiday and have a safe Thanksgiving. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Garcia. Is there anyone else?
There are two other people.
One of them is Mr. Saunders.
And one of them is Mr. Premes, but I don't think he wants to speak.
Is there anyone else wishing to speak at this time? If so, just press star 6 to unmute. Hearing none, is there anyone else inside? Okay. I will now close first round of public comment. Now we have no public hearings tonight, so we'll move forward with action matters. A, resolution recommending appointment to the Board of Equalization, Mr. Dahl.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I've got a brief presentation that covers both A and B, and you've seen this before, and we're kind of having to do things a little different due to some changes here. So the board already have made some appointments to the Board of Equalization, but due to a resignation, we have to kind of come back to the board and get another appointee. So if you remember, The Board of Supervisors recommends appointment to the Board of Equalization. 2021, we have an annual reassessment. Your recommended appointments goes before the circuit court and judges having jurisdiction in this county. So every Board of Equalization shall be composed of not less than three, but no more than five. Because we have five election districts, we have to have five BOE members. Back in November, the board had appointed five BOE members, and that order moved forward for circuit court judges. Since then, one of the BOE members has put in their resignation just due to some concerns with what's going on in the current environment of COVID. So with that being said, we need to, one, fill a replacement spot for that BOE member. In addition, what we thought would probably be appropriate at this moment is you are allowed to have up to two alternates if you have a board of five or more members. With COVID happening right now, we figured it would maybe be a good idea to also appoint some alternates as well. So it just so happens that, one, we've got one board member that resigned, so we have one appointment that we need to fill, and then two alternates. Luckily enough, we've got three applicants, and then the board would just have to decide, well, one, you have to decide, do you want to have two alternates? Really, the cost by having two alternates, they would have to do some training, which would account to maybe 3 hours. 3 hours for the alternate BOE members. But if something should happen, if something, you know, they can't make it, then there's alternates to kind of be in play. So again, current BOE members that the board appointed, the four that are remaining, you have Ms. Gloria Vest, Mr. Dan Nunziato, Mr. Tom Payne, and Mr. Randy White. Mr. Everett Hanna ended up resigning. And right now, we had three new appointees or applications go in for BOE recommendation. We have one, Mr. Scott Marshall from the Cunningham District. He was on the Economic Development Authority for about, you know, close to 20 years, Fluvanna County Parks and Rec, and he would be a new applicant to the 2021 Board of Equalization. Mr. Dean Tisdat, Cunningham District, president of an HOA, Deputy Director of Fairfax Police Youth Association, Vice President of Condominium Association, and he would also be a new 2021 BOE member. And then the last applicant is Mr. Ron Lozier from the Cunningham District, a former board member of the Thomas Jefferson Soil and Water Conservation District, former board member of the Thomas Jefferson Housing Improvement Corporation, founding director of the Fluvanna Louisa Housing Foundation, former board member of Piedmont Housing Alliance, and he would be a new applicant for the 2021 Board of Equalization. So you have those three individuals that had put in their application. So at minimum, you have to pick at least one to fill the member slot, but if the board chooses, you could choose all three and you'd have one go to the member slot and then two go to alternates.
Mr. Chairman, let me make a comment about that.
Yes, sir.
I think it would be prudent to appoint two alternates, but I think there's an argument you have to. So that's all the more reason that I recommend you do it.
Okay, well, I guess the first thing we need to do is to figure out which one we want to name to the actual board itself.
I'd like to name Ron Lozier.
Okay, we've got...
I like that name, too.
Okay, so we got...
That's fine.
Sounds good. Do I need to make that a motion and pass that as a motion?
You will ultimately.
Yes.
Okay, so let's might as well do... take care of one first.
Yep.
So Ms. Eager, got you making a motion for Mr. Lozier. Ms. Booker,
yes.
I think you seconded. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1. Mr. O'Brien's being absent. Now, as far as the alternates go, I think that's pretty much a no-brainer. We might have to put, somebody might be in quarantine, so if they're in quarantine, we need to be able to replace them. Ms. Eager, any thoughts?
I'll make a motion that we elect Mr. Scott Marshall and Dean Tistret as our alternates to the Board of Equalization.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Got a motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Ms. Booker. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Okay.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1.
So on the exhibit going to Circuit Court judges for appointment, we'll add those names as the board selected, and then I guess the final motion would be this, recommending the resolution with those names as you just had made motions on.
Do I have a motion?
I move that the Board of Supervisors adopt a resolution entitled A Resolution Recommending Appointment to the Board of Equalization.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1. Now, B, Board of Equalization pay increase, Mr. Dahl.
Yep, so just one thing, talking about the Board of Equalization. So in July 2017, the BOE was being paid kind of as a 1099 contract employee. Back then, we have transitioned all boards to going through our payroll system. July of 2017 was the last pay increase for the Board of Equalization. When other boards, their pays were increased effective June 24th, 2019. I'm just recommending a pay increase from $23 an hour to $24 an hour. And based upon, I think it was based upon 40 hours, we're talking about $200 increase for the Board of Equalization members in total for the whole fiscal year. We also have some savings. Previously, there was an admin assistant. As we started looking into it a little bit more, we've got some staffing within county admin that we can accommodate some of the appointment setting and some of the other administrative skills. So what we were paying before for an admin assistant of $3,600, we might need some additional part-time dollars of maybe $1,000 at most. And that's probably the high side if we even go that far. So again, I'm just asking for a $1 an hour increase for the BOE.
All right, do we have any questions or comments? Ms. Eager, are you okay with that?
No, I haven't, but I can make the motion if you like.
If you would like, that'd be great.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve an increase in the Board of Equalization BOE member pay from $23 an hour to $24 per hour effective November 10th, 2020.
Do I have a second? Got a motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
And chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. We'll now move forward with C, the letter of support for pharmaceutical processor. Mr. Rothmel.
Good afternoon, board. I'm here to discuss a pharmaceutical processor that's looking to come to the county. That's too much power now. So just to give you a little update on medical cannabis in Virginia. In 2015, the Board of Pharmacy provided a defense of using CBD oil or TCHA oil initially just to alleviate epilepsy. In 2016 and 2017, they authorized the establishment of 5 pharmaceutical processors in Virginia. And then in 2018, they expanded the use of oils upon recommendation from a physician. 2019 moved that you had to be a registered agent. And registration and authorization in order to get the oils. And then in 2020, they also are allowing the pharmaceutical providers, processors, to have 5 additional dispensaries in the HSAs. Now in Virginia, it's done, as there's only 5 processors, it's done by region. We are in HSA 1, which comes, as you can see, Flavanna is located right here. Goes all the way up to Winchester, goes from the Potomac over to West Virginia. We are a very large HSA. HSA 2 is Northern Virginia. 3 is the Southwestern Virginia. The Capital Region is 4, and then 5 is Hampton Roads. The 5 licenses that were awarded earlier in 2017 and 2018, HSA 1 was for PharmaCann, HSA 2, Delicito, Three, Dharma Pharmaceuticals, they are operational, they're in Bristol. HSA 4 is Greenleaf of Virginia, they just became operational in the past week. And then Columbia Care, located in, I believe it is in Norfolk, but I'd have to double check on that. I know they're in the 757 area. Now, HSA 1 license was awarded to PharmaCann. They transferred that license to MedMen as part of a merger that they were going through. That merger fell through. MedMen did not go forward with the license. They asked for an extension, but in July of 2020, the Board of Pharmacy rescinded that license. The Board of Pharmacy has since reissued a request for application for our HSA. And applicants for the HSA license must demonstrate financial ability, marketing plans, product expertise, facility information, industry involvement, and site selection. Overall, there is a 275-point application, with each item that's listed there being weighted. And that's how they make a decision on who the license should go to. Applicants must show community support, that the community understands that this is coming to their area. And sites must produce and must dispense from the location that they select. So a processor where they are processing the product will also have to dispense from that product. Now in the future, they will be able to add 5 more dispensaries for export to those dispensaries, but initially they will only have 1 production and 1 dispensary. The license for this will be awarded on March 30th, 2021. We will not know anything until the end of March. Now we were approached by Yay Wellness, Y-A-E, it is pronounced Yay, about the county-owned property behind the Fork Union Fire Department and the Fluvanna Community Center. It's tax map 51A-129A. Yay Wellness has offered $135,000 for 15 acres, preliminarily located on the northern portion of the property. Now, people ask, what does 15 acres look like of the property? Roughly, using our GIS tool, this is 15 acres. This is just to give you an idea of kind of what size and where they're looking to locate. You can see here the fire department is located, and here is the community center, and this is US Route 15 in Virginia 6.
And Fork Union is
the Fork Union is just below down there. Here, and Dixie would be over here. Also in their letter of intent, Yay Wellness, they propose to build a 100,000 square foot building employing 50 people. They want to prioritize regional applicants that are veterans, or diverse background candidates for employment. They have 24 employees for cultivation, 20 employees for dispensary, and then also some administrative staff at the facility. They plan to use local contractors for construction. There are negotiations with a company out of Richmond for the overall contract, but then the subcontractors, they want to use local contractors. Their capital investment will be somewhere between 15 to 20 million. 100,000 square foot building and all the work that need to go into the lab will be a significant capital investment into the community. They've also they will dedicate 4 hours per employee per year for volunteer efforts. They will make a $100,000 donation for support of the fire department, payable over 5 years. One thing that excited them was the fire training facility that we're trying to construct on the nearby property. They also would have a crime prevention seminar and training provided by the company's director of security. And then maintenance and upkeep of the Petersburg Hill Plantation Slave Cemetery, which is located partially on the property that the county owns. And then additional financial support for area nonprofits that was not specifically listed. Just to give you as a background of who Yay Partners is, Ashreen. And Ashreena will have to help me with the pronunciation of her last name. She is the CEO and CFO of the company. She was part of the successful bid for HSA 4, which was Greenleaf Medical. She was part of the Virginia partnership that was that applied with Greenleaf. Greenleaf has since purchased out the Virginia partnership portion of that. So now she has formed with 2 other partners so that they can go forward with another license for HSA 1. She is a founding member of the Virginia Medical Cannabis Coalition. She's done a ton of research and spent a ton of time getting into what medical cannabis is and what it can do and how to process it. She's very experienced in this. Beyond that, she's also a Class A contractor involved with Oz Enterprises, a granite company in Richmond. So she's been an entrepreneur for over 15 years here. The pharmacist in charge will be Yulia Habib. She currently works for Bond Secures in Richmond, and she has experience in hospital managerial student work as well as retail pharmacy experience. She earned her Doctor of Pharmacy from the University of Arizona, and she has knowledge planning effective drug therapies. Then the third partner is Eukaria Jackson. You also may know her as UK. She will oversee the pharmacist and ensure operations. She's been involved in the medical field. And one of her favorite things to talk about is that she's been a part of many nonprofit boards, including the American Heart Association, the Science Museum of Virginia, the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts, and the YWCA of Richmond, as well as the Collegiate School. She's a real community builder. So those are the three women, and their initials make YAE. That's where they get the name from. Now here's a preliminary look at the property that we received late last year. Yay Wellness is interested in purchasing this area for their building. Now this is a very preliminary view of what the property could look like if we were to make it into a business park. We'd still have to do more research to know exact layouts, but this is a preliminary look of how you could lay out the Fork Union property. Also note, since this is done, the county has purchased this property here to the south, and we're under contract for these two pieces. This facility, it will be 100,000 square feet. It would cultivate, process, and dispense. All operations would be inside the building. Nothing would be happening outside the building. Security is a top concern for the facility by the company. Sheriff has met with the director of security before Mrs. Booker and Mr. Sheridan met with Yay Wellness. And the sheriff has also provided a letter of support for Yay Wellness. Both parties left very satisfied, both the company as did the sheriff, of the plans for security for this property. Yay Wellness would, of course, drive significant traffic to the Fort Union area, as anyone can get a prescription and go to any of the producers. So just because you don't live in HSA 1 doesn't mean you have to come to HSA 1. An important thing to remember is that the HSA south of us, HSA 3, that production facility is located in Bristol. So it is a significant distance from us. We probably have a large proportion of their easier to get to us than it would be to get to Bristol. And then Yay Wellness would be a customer of the Fork Union Sanitary District. They would utilize their own drain field. They plan a high recycled water usage. So really, the sewage that would be going into the drain field would mainly just be from bathrooms. They're not planning on just using the water once that would be used for the cultivation aspect. As was noted by Mr. Garcia, Yay Wellness has received over 95 signatures in support of the project in the last week. It's rather impressive considering we had Thanksgiving and we're also in the midst of a pandemic. Of those, 56 of them were wet signatures, meaning that someone actually signed one piece of paper and kept passing them around, which is really impressive. The community has come out in great support of this. Both potential neighbors have signed off on the usage. And the county would be the third neighbor of this property. The sheriff, the Chamber of Commerce Board, the Historical Society, members of the Fork Union business community, veterans, and other business owners in the county, as well as other county residents, have provided letters of support. And just today, we also received word that the Virginia Cooperative Extension would be able to provide their support for this project. The county letter of support is a critical piece to the application process, as it is required as part of their application. I believe Sheriff Hass, he was planning on being here.
He's on, though.
Yeah, okay.
He's
on. I can see Ashrina is on.
Yeah, so Ashrina, as well as UK and Julia, they're all on the line. If you have any questions or if you'd like to hear from the company themselves, we have all three partners as well.
Ms. Eager or Mr. Weaver, did y'all have any questions?
No, I don't.
Osorino, would you like to say something?
Yes, I just want to say hello, everybody, and I'm very honored to be in this conference with Board of Supervisors, who are on the Board of Supervisors. I have also my partners along with me, and we all very grateful for all the community support that we received. As Brian said, it's been a Thanksgiving week and pandemic on top. With such a great warmth, we were welcomed to Fluvanna County, and we are so happy that we received that welcoming message, and not only by words, but with all those letters was coming in, we couldn't be more happier. So very thank you, and very grateful on that.
Well, I can tell you right now, UK or
Julia,
did either one of y'all want to say anything?
Yes, hello everybody. This is Julia Habib speaking. I am one of the co-founders of Ye Wellness, and I am the pharmacist in charge. And I would like to, first of all, second my partner, Ashrini, and just extend my tremendous gratitude for the warm welcome that we received from Fluvanna County. And I'm honored and very thankful to be part of this meeting. And we're so impressed with your community, and we're so excited to bring the business there and to support the community in any way we can. Everybody we've spoke with has been so wonderful and welcoming and nice and gracious, and we just can't say enough of good things about your community and Fluvanna County and everybody we've met so far. So just thank you very much, and thank you for your support, and we're looking forward to coming to you and make great things happen. And if you have any questions, I would be happy to answer about the business or the operations or anything else that you may have in mind.
Okay.
I'm wondering what the best date would be if this goes through. When would it start? When would this business start up?
When would you be up and running if we get the bid on March 31st or 30th?
So, Julia, you want to answer, or do you want me to answer?
I can answer. We are applying for the pharmaceutical processor license to the Virginia Board of Pharmacy, actually at the end of this week. And we're expecting to hear back whether we get the license, and we're very hopeful. And that would happen at the end of February or probably even March. From that point, we have 1 year to build the facility, and we're planning to become operational in beginning of 2022.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Weaver, from a county perspective, we will have to prepare and keep this process moving through our regulatory approvals as if they already have the license. So between now and when they find out, we are going to start the process of, all right, let's get your site development plan, you know, all those things in order. So that way we are as close to starting on when they find out as possible, because the Word Pharmacy is expecting to be operational in a year.
Right.
I was reading something where Albemarle is also a company wants to come into Albemarle. Is that company in competition?
Yes.
And they want to go on Avon Street in that area. So there, and how many other companies in competition?
We've received many phone calls on this from various competitors. Of what I'm aware of, there are at least four other applicants in our region, in our immediate region. But I would say probably you're going to be looking at, there's 33 counties, localities in our HSA. I mean, you could have 40 applicants, This is going to be a highly competitive application process. But Ashreen has gone through it once before.
Yeah, so. And she's already been successful.
Yeah.
So that's a plus.
Well, all I can say to y'all ladies is thank you very much for being interested in Fluvanna County, and we look forward to working with y'all over the many years to come, hopefully.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. So are we.
Yes, ma'am.
I just want to say, you know, Dito, my partner's comments, I'm also a co-founder. My name is Eugeria Jackson. And just want to sincerely say how very grateful we are. I remember my very 30 seconds interface with Brian and Eric. They were so welcoming. I felt a sense of belonging immediately in Fluvanna. And also attending your Chamber of Commerce meeting, a number of meetings as well. I just really felt at home. And I say this with some background. I covered a lot of rural towns during my 15 years working for Eli Lilly in pharmaceutical sales and marketing. You imagine the rural town, the coal mining towns of eastern Kentucky, and I gotta admit, it takes a while to feel at home in a small town, and I felt instantly at home. And we're very grateful for all your support, and we thank you in advance for your continued support. And it's just such an awesome privilege to be able to interface with you all out the app virtually. So thank you again for your support.
You're most certainly welcome, and forgive me if you see me answering a text, but being in a small town, two of my dogs have gotten out of my house, and I have neighbors texting me that they're running around. So I'm trying to get my son to go get them. Alrighty. Are there any other questions we have?
No.
Okay. All right. Hearing none, do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the letter of support for YAE Wellness, LLC, a pharmaceutical processor applying to operate a medical cannabis production facility at the county-owned Fork Union property.
Do I have a second?
Second.
We've got a motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Ms. Booker. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1. Mr. O'Brien's absent.
Thank you, Gordon. We'll be sending this to them tonight so they can get it out.
It will be on the way quickly. Mr. Rothmel will drive it if you have to.
He is. Mr. Rothmel will be leaving here shortly to go scanner then and get it sent to them.
All righty. Now we'll move forward with D, Fluvanna County Public Schools FY21 CARES Act budget transfer. Ms. Twisdale.
And just one thing, Mr. Chair, we've got a brief presentation by Ms. Twisdale, and then we also have a little presentation by Ms. Gillum with Fluvanna County Public Schools to give a little more information on the technology piece.
Exactly. The number is the schools requested $150,000 for CARES funds to cover technology that they had purchased for virtual learning. At the time, the board, I think, was concerned that we might not have enough CARES funds towards the end, and so we were asked to bring it back in December if we still had funds available.
You want to go forward?
Yes.
Just let me know.
Okay. So just a quick overview of our CARES fund situation. We originally received $4,758,404. We also received $24,944 of EMS-type CARES funds, which we're using for the power loads that we discussed at the last meeting. The CARES funds have been used to cover $2,375,262 worth of salaries for public safety and human services. When the auditors were here in November, they informed us that we should also be using these to cover E-911 salaries, which we did not do because we were erring on the side of caution. Since the auditors were completely convinced that was something that we should do, we have figured in the E-911 salaries from July to December in this figure. It's an estimate because December is not quite over, but it's close. The schools at this point have received from us, from the county, $301,017 for PPE, masks, gloves, cleaning supplies, that kind of thing. $45,990 for hotspots that they were putting around the county to try to get signals to houses. And they're requesting the $150,000 for the Chromebooks that they had purchased for virtual learning. We also have about $580,000 for broadband that we have committed, and the small business grants for $603,000. So that is a large majority of the CARES funds. of course, there was a lot of PPE, hand sanitizer, this kind of thing. But those are the big ticket items that we'll be doing with CARES funds. Could you click the funds no back? No, go back.
I'm sorry. I'll go down. Yep. Yep.
On the E911, how much money did we pick up on that one?
That is, as soon as...
Did you say go to the fund budget?
No, go to the link at the top, the hyperlink on that page you're on.
This one?
Yep.
Okay. Go back to the brief?
Yes.
Okay.
E911 is $329,000.
Thank you.
Oh, but this one right here. Yes.
This is probably going to be a little bit hard to see because it's large. Mm. But if you scroll all the way down to the bottom, Ms. MacGyver has spent her life doing this since March.
Tough job.
We have about $92,000 left. If we give the schools their $150,000, take the E911 salaries, this is where we are right now. Now, this could be a little bit off because we're still receiving. We get invoices from different departments for PPE. They had to buy extra masks. They had to buy extra gloves. But right now, this is where we're at. $92,000 left.
So the memo was showing about $500,000 before. Again, we received some guidance that we can use about $300,000 of that to, for other public safety salaries, E911, and then if the board decides to use the $150,000 to go to the schools, then like I said, that'll leave us with some other little things, about $92,000, all said and done, and we've gone through a good bit of those CARES fundings.
So we had a total of a little bit over $4 million. In CARES?
Yep.
Is that right?
4.8, sir.
Huh?
About 4.8, sir.
Right, and we're down to?
92,000.
Okay. Very good.
Now, I will say, too, the schools had originally, they were going to ask for this 150 as a carryover out of the remaining fund balance, but after talking to them, they were willing to or ask us if they could possibly use CARES funds, and that way they wouldn't have to take it out of the
right.
Yeah, our we can put it back in general fund.
Yeah, our thing was instead of using fund balance, general fund, this is something to help them during the pandemic to provide additional learning opportunities remotely.
And that's really all I have. Do you have any questions for me? And I know Ms. Gillum is on the line, I believe.
Yeah, and then I've got a presentation by Ms. Gillum, too, where she can go into more details. I know there's some questions regarding technology last time.
Are there any questions from the board at this time?
No.
For Ms. Twisdale, Ms. Ingram.
No, I think I have some questions for Ms. Gillum when she's finished.
All righty, Ms. Gillum.
She.
Good afternoon. So in your packet, you have a brief presentation of kind of an update of where we were with technology, because I could tell from our previous meeting that you had some questions relative to that. So back in the spring of 2020, we purchased 1,600 Chromebooks, and that was part of our normal replacement cycle that we had planned to do in 2020. And kind of when we saw things, it was in that February-March time frame, we saw things were going on. We decided to go ahead and order those as early as possible so that we could get them for the summer. And we did get them for the summer. We used those, and we also pulled Chromebooks out of Chromebook carts that had been assigned to students in the schools, and we assigned those to our virtual students. And then we used all the newly purchased Chromebooks. We distributed them to students grades 12th through 4th, who we knew were potentially going to be hybrid students. And then we did through 4th because at that point we ran out of those new Chromebooks, and so then we started pulling Chromebooks from other carts and other schools to fill out the pre-K through 3rd grade. And we also purchased another 600 Chromebooks so that we could replace things that were damaged or ones that we needed to replace. This is obviously the first time we've done a one-to-one, so we really didn't know what to expect in terms of lost or damaged Chromebooks. We are asking parents to reimburse us for the cost of Chromebooks that are damaged, and it is a cost of $200. At this point, we've had about 20 that were damaged that could not be repaired under warranty. Some of the newer ones are under warranty, the older ones are not. we're the technology office is estimating that it's usually we have about 10 to 20 that are out for warranty work, or if they're older, then they're e-wasted if they're not repairable. But our warranty for Chromebooks for the G7s does expire March of 2021, so that is, of course, a concern. We have some on hand just for online testing. We do have to do online SOL testing for the high school in January, so we've reserved some just for that online testing, so we make sure we have what we need on hand for that. And then we also have some in the schools. We are asking kids to bring their Chromebooks back and forth to school, but if they forget one or it's not charged, then we have another way to provide them with a device while they're in school. The oldest models that we have were issued for virtual students, and that's because most of the issues with those are battery life, and they need to be plugged in constantly. So if a kid's at home, then they have the ability to plug it in versus in a classroom where they may or may not have access to an outlet. So what we're looking at in terms of future needs is potentially replacing some of the ones that were in the cart, replace the ones that aren't returned or not usable. One of the things we found when we came back to hybrid was that there may have been Chromebooks that were damaged or not working properly that kids didn't say anything about when they had them at home, but when they came in hybrid and we could see them, then we could see that they were going to need repairs. So we're kind of discovering some of those as we go along as well. We're estimating that we're going to need somewhere around 2,000 more devices, including ones that are going to be end of life or not usable, and then potentially lost where they're not turned back into us. One of the issues we have is we can't, there's such a long waiting list on the supply right now. It's 6 to 9 months. The other thing that, of course, is happening with supply and demand is they're increasing the prices. So what we were paying $200 for, we're probably going to have to pay about $310 for, which doesn't sound like a lot till you're buying a large quantity of them and you start multiplying that out. So it becomes a significant expense. And then we're looking at reviewing and revising replacement cycles and trying to determine how many we would need to have in the schools on hand if we continue to issue them to kids one-to-one. I'll try to answer any questions you might have.
Ms. Gilm, I thought that we had bought 3,500 Chromebooks from a previous meeting.
I would have to talk with Mr. Gifford. I can't answer that off the top of my head.
Okay.
Any other questions?
No, I think that's a pretty significant increase of about 60%. Now, that really raises the cost quite fast.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And part of that is the cost of the device, and part of it is the cost of the license.
Okay.
Do we have a total number on how many Chromebooks we actually have, G4s or whatever, versus 4s versus 7s?
Mr. Gifford gave me a breakdown of basically we have about 450 or 480 at the high school that are just reserved for testing, and then there's another 600 that are in these different carts, and then we have some in carts at the middle school, but as you probably know, some of them we had to pull out of the carts, and so the carts are actually empty. I would say there's somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 Chromebooks that are actually in the school right now, in the different schools. But many of those are those ones that are end of life, and they were scheduled to be e-wasted, but we kept them in service just because of where we are right now.
I'd like to know a total, when next time we speak, of how many we have total in the school system.
I think Mr. Winkler gave an estimate last.
It's around 6,000.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, Mr. Winkler.
Yes, Ms. Gillum, nice job. Thank you so much. It is right around 6,000. Unfortunately, on any given day, particularly with the G4s that are ending their end of life here in the spring, we might lose five computers to either damage or just literally they've broken from the end of life. That's why we're looking at buying 500 new with this $150,000. A year or so ago, we could have gotten about 750 with that. So we're down, what would that be, 33% of what we can buy for 150,000 right now. Ms. Eager, we have never purchased, to my knowledge, 3,500 Chromebooks. Even years ago, when we were looking at a request as much as $600,000, we weren't looking at a purchase that large. About the biggest Chromebook purchase that I can remember in my tenure is slightly over, right around 1,500 Chromebooks. Most of the time that we request a bigger purchase, whether it be a CIP purchase of, I'll use $300,000 all the way up to $600,000, it's going towards infrastructure and also laptop replacement. But with the pandemic and going to a one-to-one initiative, it's imperative that we replenish, and we have, I'm going to say, 4,000 Chromebooks on hand at any given day working with the 3,500 kids that we have. Now, our ADM doesn't show that right now, but that's what we're looking at for next year as we move in to 2021-22.
And they're cheaper devices, but they're just not nearly as durable as the laptops you might purchase for more.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. The laptops, from a truly usable laptop to get the wear and tear, it's well over double. It's probably closer to triple, if not four times the amount of what we'd be looking at. And the Chromebooks are great machines, but the shelf life on them is about 3 years at best case scenario, versus a laptop, you're going to get five. If you take care of them, you can get more than that. It's just the overall lifespan of what we're looking at.
So if school opened person to person and everybody's back at school, what is the condition of your Chromebooks and your computers? Are you going to lack some? Are you going to have too many? Where would you be? Do you have any idea?
Yes, ma'am, I do. And actually, that's a great question, Ms. Booker. We actually had that discussion today. We met with admin, and I'm working under the assumption, whether it be safe or not, it might be a false assumption, that we're going to have to offer some type of virtual instruction well into the next school year. We talked about the importance of the possibility of just staying with a one-to-one initiative. So it is our plan. Right now, the last day of school is scheduled, and I'm not saying that that day is not going to move up or down a little bit. The last day of school is scheduled for June 11th. Our plan is to collect all of our basically 3,300 Chromebooks that are out there, take inventory, assess the damage. Some of them will turn over to e-waste just because they've lived out of their shelf life with that. And then if we would open up to in-person instruction next year, knowing, let's just say we had 100% of our kids back in the classroom, we would be able to then disperse about 3,500 students to the one-on-one, and then on any given day have another 500 throughout our schools available if a kid forgets his or they don't bring it charged, so we would have them in classroom carts. We do have some laptops and CPU units, but our CPU units are in labs where students would go, and those units are actually more robust. Thinking about our units in our engineering lab and different labs, they're bigger, badder machines. So they're going to do more than what a Chromebook can do. But it is my anticipation right now, and the plan right now, to stay with a one-to-one initiative next year. That's why, from my standpoint, the $150,000 from CARES money, I don't anticipate being able to use it right now. But the good news is those materials are already here. So we can use this $150,000 and assign it to a purchase we've already made. We're going to turn around and put $150,000, if not more, into a purchase, perhaps using additional CARES money that we may have, or from our budget money, and buy a replenish cycle to make sure those computers are here, hopefully by May, no longer than when we open back up in August or September of next year. That's more than you asked for, Ms. Booker, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Ms. Eager?
I asked Mr. Winkler, where do you store these?
Yeah, so right now, Ms. Eager, with the 3,500 that are out, They're in individual student hands. When they come back to us, I asked Mr. Gifford that question today. I said, are you going to have the capabilities of going through 3,500 computers and assessing them for damage, fixing them, or basically send them off to e-waste? And he said, yes. If we were to go back to our plan of instruction that we've always used in the past, where very limited one-to-one correspondence goes, a lot of very few computers go home, they would be in carts. They're usually, the cart is about the size of a larger suitcase, and it has a charging station within the cart, and you can store up to 50 computers in some of the carts, but most of them, there are 25 to 30 carts. Again, they're the size of a larger piece of suitcase. Remember, a Chromebook, if you're familiar, is smaller than basically a piece of paper. Not thickness-wise, but I'm talking about overall-wise.
Yeah.
Yeah, the carts that we have at the middle school are about the size of one of those small freezers that you
don't. Yeah, a portable refrigerator. Yes.
And they're bigger than the little refrigerators you'd have in your dorm room. They're good size, and they hold, like I said, most of them in our place hold 30.
Yeah.
All right, are there any other questions?
No.
Okay. Do we have a motion? Yes, sir, Mr. Weaver.
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve a budget transfer of $150,000 from the FY21 CARES Act contingency line to the Fluvanna County Public Schools FY21 budget.
Second.
Got a motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you all. Thank you.
You're welcome. See you in a little while.
Yes, sir.
FY21 Board of Supervisors Contingency Budget Transfer Drug Court County Match. Mr. Dawes.
Oh, Miss MacGyver.
Miss MacGyver.
Both of our names are on there because I
didn't. Oh, I hadn't made it down yet.
That is quite right. Not at all offended. I'm bringing you the last piece of the puzzle for the drug court. Last meeting I brought to you that we had been awarded the almost $500,000 drug court grant to get drug court off the ground. The final piece of it is a cash match. The grant requires a 25 cash or in-kind match. The majority of that will be covered with salaries from the clerk of court, the sheriff's office, and the Commonwealth attorney. But during budget discussions, the board, we talked about it and agreed that we would do a $50,000 cash match for startup funds. $5,000 of that is included in the circuit court judge's budget. The remaining $45,000, the discussion was that it would come from board BOS contingency, and that is just some cash to help get things started in this very first year and up and running.
Yeah, since it was a one-time cost, kind of a startup one-time cost, we didn't want to bake it into the budget, and then the discussion was during budget time to bring it back to the board, to do it out of the board contingency since it was just one-time money. So this is just kind of, as Ms. MacGyver said, putting kind of the last piece of the puzzle together.
And currently, the BOS contingency balance is $122,600. So there are funds in there to cover this. Are there any questions?
Any questions?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
All right, any other discussion? Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a budget transfer of $45,000 from the fiscal year 21 BOS contingency budget to drug court budget.
All righty, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
I got ahead of myself here for a second. I got a motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. One absent. F. Self-contained breathing apparatus contract amendment. Ms. Tolan.
Good evening. This is an amendment to a current contract. Since the outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic, fire and rescue have responded to approximately 400 positive and suspected positive patients with the virus. Fire and rescue chiefs have requested that the board approve the purchase of the PPE with funds provided by the CARES Act. On November 4th, the board did approve $68,891 for this purpose. Because of the nature of the equipment and the time frame required to do the purchase and the amount that it's going to cost, we are able to buy it on this current contract where we just purchased the SCBAs. It's a different type of equipment, but that cooperative contract contains these items, so we're able to use that and get it done a little bit quicker. So this amendment is for part of the equipment that they requested. There's 125 masks, 125 of the adapters, 204 of the filters. The original request was for 200, but they're packaged a little bit differently than they thought, so it's a little bit more. And a small purchase, a separate purchase, there will be also the carrying bags and the hoods. But this is just for the first three items.
Remember, the board approved the funding, CARES funding already. This is just really approving the contract to purchase the equipment.
Right.
No additional funds.
No additional funds. The board already approved the funds for this.
Yep, this is just to approve because of the dollar amount the board needs to approve signing the contract. Any questions?
No. None I hear right now. Thank you so very much, Ms. Toler. Is there any other discussion? Do I have a motion?
So,
yes, ma'am, Ms. Eager?
So this actually cost about $15,000 less than what we appropriated.
Is that right? There is another small purchase for the additional items. It'll come right up to the total dollar.
This is
amount.
For the first three, Mrs. Eager, and the next one will be for the last two.
Those last few items are purchasing from a different vendor, and it's below $50,000, so there's no need for the board to approve that again.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. All right, do I have a motion?
Okay, I move the Board of Supervisors approve the contract amendment with Fire and Safety Equipment Company for additional self-contained breathing apparatus, SCBA, and related equipment totaling $53,080.15.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1. There are no appointments for tonight. So we will now move forward with presentations. First up is G, VDOT Quarterly Report. Aaron French.
Chairman Sheridan, members of the board, good evening. My name is Aaron French, Operations Engineer of VDOT. This evening I'll be presenting our quarterly report and we'll be referencing several key items from the latest monthly report. We'll begin with Smart Scale on page 1. VDOT is currently evaluating the county's applications for project funding for the three projects at Turkey Seg, Route 600 and 618, and Route 250. On page 2, we'll get into our current projects, with the most noteworthy being the completion of a roundabout at Route 53 and 618. All of 2020's resurfacing has been completed, and a list of proposed routes for the 2021 cycle will be compiled and shared with the county for review in the coming months. From page 3, there we go. You'll find that our traffic engineers are working on several speed and safety reviews. We are working diligently to find an effective means of correcting the center line placed on Route 1040 Broken Island Road as well. On to the final page, page 4. We have several current and upcoming safety projects in the county. They're listed at the top of the page. The turn lane at Blue Ridge Drive, Route 708 and 250, is currently under construction and will be completed early next week. We're planning a jack and bore culvert replacement on Route 250 at the Correctional Center, which will begin within the next 2 weeks. As always, our digital speed display signs are available to be placed upon request. Our area land use staff have been very occupied and have processed 77 permits so far this year, including several key site plans. To wrap up, our maintenance crews at Zion Crossroads and Palmyra Area Headquarters have responded to 257 work orders since July. Thank you for your attention. Does anybody have any questions?
Any questions?
No. The roundabout is real nice, isn't it?
I will bring something up to your attention. One of my other jobs is I drive a school bus on Stage Junction Road. And on Stage Junction Road, there's a drainage issue about 0.3 mile from Route 6. One of the ditches there is just holding water. And just get somebody to go by and look at that, please. And it comes out.
Not a problem.
Comes out about 3 feet onto the road right now when we've had these storms.
Yes, sir. Myself or our superintendent at the headquarters down there will take a look at that very shortly.
It's about, well, it's when you go past going north, you go past the 15 mile per hour speed sign, it's that very next curve. It goes down and comes back to the left. So, anyway, I wish I had a better address for you, but there's no houses right there.
We will find it. Should not be an issue. Thank you very much.
And Mr. Chair, there was one other thing. So the county received a request. We had talked to the board about this. Someone had made mention that, you know, the new roundabout and the roundabout at 53 and 15 VDOT, when they put those in, they did a very nice job of landscaping them and making them a little more aesthetically pleasing. The other roundabout that we have in the county on 53 just has grass. Does VDOT ever go back and do any type of landscaping updates to those without getting like community input or community projects going?
That is something that I'll have to look into. Typically, when a project is landscaped upon completion, and given that project is not very, very old, I don't think that it has been reviewed for any improvements in the landscaping, but that is certainly something that can be looked into.
Well, and like I said, we had a citizen reach out to us about wanting to do a project, and after we reached out to VDOT staff and looking at some of the requirements, there's certainly a lot of requirements from a road safety standpoint that your regular citizens would have to do, and it just seemed like it would be something, it would be something that would fall into VDOT's realm a little easier.
We'll follow up. We'll follow up with you and maybe meet with that citizen and discuss our options and see if there's anything that we can do to figure out a solution.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity.
All right, thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
All right, any other questions?
The only thing that I think it came up before was Road 655-56.
Was it on here?
I think it was on here. That they couldn't put a yellow sign in the middle because wasn't enough road. Will you ever have a center line? What do you have to do in order to get a center line? Because I think someone said they were afraid that was an accident waiting to happen. But they're saying it's not enough road.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, I don't know specifically about this. Yeah, they had talked about when we had submitted them, one, either the road's not wide enough, or two, it doesn't have a high enough traffic count. And and I think specifically we sent in for 652, 655, and 656 down in the Bremo area. And as you see here, 55 and 56 do not meet the minimum width or the minimum vehicle per day of 500, and then 652 doesn't meet the minimum vehicle per day.
How many roads in the county do we have like that?
A lot of roads don't have lines.
There are some roads.
That's the vast majority of roads in our county.
Yeah, secondary. Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
So when a bus goes down that road,
I know one of the people that drives the bus on 656.
Yeah, how about it? What do you do? When you need a cop, you just go very carefully.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I don't go by my brother's philosophy when he's driving a fire truck because I'm bigger than they are. Because every once in a while it's a tractor trailer.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, the vast majority of our roads do not have lines. It's good to know the 18 feet mark now. Of course, I'll never remember that. I'll try to.
Yeah.
On how wide it has to be. Any other questions? Gentlemen, thank you very much. We do appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
Y'all too. All right, next up is H, Compensation Board Funded Bonus for Sworn Personnel in the Sheriff's Office. Ms. Rice.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I'm here to just present you with some information that came down from the state within the past several weeks. If you want to click to that next slide. So when the state adopted their FY21 budget this past year, they actually kind of froze any funding that would have been available for percentage pay increases and bonuses for any of the constitutional offices, which includes law enforcement as well. And that was forward because we didn't know where the revenue was going to fall out as far as COVID-19 goes, and Covina County did something similar. It kind of held back on our expenditures a little bit. So in a recent special session of the General Assembly, I believe that was in October, the governor was presented with an amendment to the state budget, which included a one-time $500 bonus for sworn law enforcement officers that are funded through the compensation board. And it was about November 19th where the governor finally signed off on that packet. It was on our previous board agenda, but the governor hadn't officially signed it yet. And so now we end up with funding from the state. We're receiving this money, and it is applied, as I stated, it is applied to sworn law enforcement that are positions funded through the compensation board. So we do not have a choice to refuse the money. We are receiving it one way or the other. And also, it can only be used for bonuses. We can't use it to offset percentage of cost increase or anything like that. One of the challenges that we have here today is that we currently have 36 sworn law enforcement officers, 36 deputies, which includes the sheriff as well, and we are only receiving 20 funding for 20 of those people to receive bonuses. So that's, I wanted to make you aware that we're receiving that money. And that's kind of the situation that we're in right now. It's a total of $10,765, which is the bonus. And then they also give us money to offset the payroll taxes that they will have. So for the board's consideration, this is not an action item for tonight. But one of the things, obviously, to kind of for you all to think about is we do have those 36 folks, and only 20 of them are receiving bonuses. And I will also say this does not include anybody in E911 or the civilian position that's in law enforcement or any other constitutional offices or any other county staff as well. So we have some scenarios up there on the board for you to kind of look at and think about a little bit. And then on the next slide, we can show you some of the dollar impact that's associated with these things. The one thing to keep in mind is that option one up there for the 500 for those 20 people, we are required to give that money out no matter what else you all decide.
Yeah, we're going to, and the compensation board, the memo sent out states that we have to do it as soon as possible in December, but no later than December 31st. We have to pay that $500 bonus out to those comp board funded positions. So as Ms. Rice said, these are just, you know, some different options. And And so the board has always taken a stance before that they've generally, if there was a bonus that went out to certain staff, it went out to all staff. But I'm not saying that's what it has to be. But so just the slide just kind of shows some different alternatives from the option that Ms. Rice shown. And Ms. Rice, I'll let you.
So basically what we put up there for consideration is, obviously you've got option one, where it's the 20 sworn deputies who are named in the compensation board, are not named here tonight, but that would receive the bonus and there would be no additional cost to the county if that was the route that that we were going to head. And then in option two, you're looking at the cost to the county if we then included the other 16 folks that were left out as far as sworn law enforcement. Option three would bring together E-911 and the one civilian position, as well as all the sworn officers. And then option four would be all permanent county staff. And you can see the total dollar cost to the county with those associated options.
Quick question. Could we use the leftover CARES Act funding money?
No, the memo from the comp board specifically states that you cannot use CARES funding to pay for any of this $500 bonus.
For the law enforcement?
Correct. For anyone.
I have a question.
Okay.
Why does the state, if there's 36 people who are sworn, why does the state only give it to 20?
That is a great question. That is because it's a formula that is put together at the state and it's applied throughout the state, where they take the size of our county and the population and they figure, it's a mathematical formula on how many deputies it should take to maintain law and order in an area. And of course, the different areas of the state that you would go to, you would see some are funded more and some are funded less. I do not know the last time that study or survey has been done, but that is what I'm aware of. And I do know that every year the sheriff is working to get more folks funded through the compensation board. And just due to budgetary constraints, they don't always get passed through, but it's an ongoing effort.
Yeah, and just one thing to keep in mind, Mr. Sherrod, I don't know, you know, there's been lots of questions, there's been lots of things in the media about, you know, different funding sources being used for either hazard pay, one-time bonuses, and things like that. And, you know, the comp board is very specific. I'm sorry, not comp board. The CARES funding memo, and Ms. Twisdale could speak on that too. It is very specific that you cannot use comp board funding. I'm sorry, CARES funding for bonuses. Now, I don't know what is said in the media versus what is actually being funded. I know some localities have done things where, because we had this offset of dollars that we're using for CARES, sometimes the offset then is being used to do other things that the county chooses to do. And Ms. Twisdale, I'm not sure if...
I can. So, for example, if we apply, sorry.
No, she was doing it. She's getting her, like the chow commercial.
Yeah, I figured I'd give her a rest. So, for example, the county used general fund, or was able to save general fund dollars by using CARES money to pay for law enforcement salaries. Right. So now those general fund dollars are available to fund something like this. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about some funding sources too. The other thing that we've come across, and we've looked at it, is that the county has realized savings this year from, we're not traveling, we're not going to conferences, there's no mileage expenses, and all of those sorts of things. We have vacancy savings in almost every department right now across the county just from the year.
Well, in addition too, you know, normally this time of year, you know, we're starting to ramp up to do some type of holiday celebration, you know, employee recognition party. You know, in this room, we would normally have close to 100 people backed in here maybe in a normal time, and we just, for staff, we just can't do that this year.
So if you're looking at the total dollars, whether it's the $17,000 or the $77,000, we do have enough just from savings of not spending money this year to cover any of those options up there.
Now the fourth option, the $163,500, it's all personnel staff.
That's all half pay, or part-time personnel and full-time personnel.
Correct.
Everybody.
Correct.
Right. So those are permanent staff, the full-time permanent staff, obviously, and then also we do have five or six that are permanent part-time, and when we calculated them out, we were anticipating doing a $250 bonus for them. They were half-time or whatever, you know, whatever that ends up to be. So I think that was about everything in there. Again, this is not related to CARES funding. It's not related to hazard pay. This is one of those things that came down from the state. It says, here's your money, here's what you can do with it. And now it's kind of up to you all on how you want to handle it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, first and foremost, we have to apply a $500 bonus to those 20 comp board funded personnel.
Number one's the least we can do.
What's the number one we have to do?
Least we can do.
Yes.
We have to do number
yes,
one.
We
could decide to do two, three, or four.
Yeah, correct. So
whenever you have money left over like that, you're supposed to pay 163 people what they wanted to give 20 people for at 500 apiece. And because you can't cover 16 more, you're supposed to run that figure up to $77,239. Is that right?
No, you're not. No, you don't have to.
But that's what you're putting before this board as an option.
Well, yes, that is an option, I will say, Mr. Weaver, because the board has, when there's been funding or bonuses that have gone to staff, however the funding comes in, the board has always treated all staff the same. So is it an unfunded mandate? Not necessarily, but if you fund it, and like I said, I'll let the sheriff speak on his personnel, but if you just fund it for this group and not that group, it's...
Well, we didn't create this.
No, you certainly didn't.
So why does the county have to buy it out?
You don't.
To make it fair?
You don't.
I mean, it doesn't make sense.
In talking with other counties, which I have done, and there's a couple of things from this. So we were fortunate enough where our revenues weren't hit by the tourism industry, COVID-19. There are other counties and cities out there that are in the same exact boat right here. They have a partial funding, but not the full thing. And yet they have people furloughed, and so they're trying to make that decision on how do you manage that. So fortunately, we're not in that situation. And I also, Mr. Dahl and I were on the phone with the compensation board. We learned that they were not consulted in this decision from the state either, because this would not have been their recommendation to do it this way.
So we're going into a new budget. New budget will be done in 7 months. We don't know where we stand really in revenue. A lot of counties never got a penny increase, let alone a 1% increase, or a 3%, or a 5%. And we want to go ahead and spend beforehand, before we get there, and to evaluate the situation. We're here to represent the taxpayer, but we're also here to be fair to the employee.
And in defense of the employee, Mr. Weaver, and to talk about some of the other things, so some of the other counties that you speak of, some of them, when they adopted their budget, they didn't do pay increases, but some of them subsequently after the fact have. Some of them done 3%. Some of them have done different type of tiered hazard pay bonuses out of their own general fund dollars, not from CARES funds, from general fund dollars. I can speak specifically on. I
Does that make it right then?
No, I'm not. But you had mentioned that I think that some others didn't do things well to begin with. No, they haven't. But things have changed, and I think in light of what's happening, and this is a board decision. Staff has really stepped up, and they've done a great job. In these current times.
That's nothing to do with a great job. I think you have outstanding
staff. We have a tremendous staff everywhere.
Right. But that's taken care of during budget season. We have 3 months, 4 months to determine what we're going to do in the new budget. And we're talking about the fire department and the things that we need there, and we don't have how many millions of dollars do we need there? But and whenever we see any extra money around here, we always find someplace to spend it. And you can't run a business that way. Not really, because you run into too many unknowns in the future.
Mr. Weaver, I agree, but I think the county staff does a fantastic job of looking to save money, and because we save money, we always don't spend money. We put it away.
I know we've saved over $2 million on the sheriffs and all.
Yes.
But that should be taken into consideration during budget period. You're sort of picking people out here in a sense, though you're not, but...
This isn't a hornet's nest that we made.
Well, no. But you don't have to jump in it either.
Okay, you're right. We don't have to jump in it. We can do for some and not do for others.
We have nothing to do with that. That's the state.
You're right. We don't. But we have the ability to do for everyone.
Now, and I have a question. The 163.5, is that how many employees, total number of employees in the county?
Yes. Full time. Yes.
Permanent
what?
Part time.
Say that.
I'm sorry. Permanent employees, and it is a 0.5 because we have an odd number of part timers.
So part timers and full timers.
Part timers get $500.
No, $250.
They get $250. Going to split that.
Okay, so we have 163.5 employees, some part-time, some full-time?
Most.
And you're saying part-time to get 250 and the full-times to get 500? How's the school system about that with their team?
I'm sorry, ma'am, I talked over you. What would you say?
How will the school system feel if we do this and they don't get $500?
Well,
I don't think you can do this. I mean, maybe we shouldn't take the $10,765.
We have no choice.
That's up to the sheriff to make that decision. That's not our decision. He will make that decision of the 20.
If we take,
we're not.
And then he makes the decision.
No, he doesn't make the decision. He has set positions that are comp board funded.
Okay, so he already has it then.
I would just I understand what the discussion is. I understand all of it. I would just, in your consideration, at least take into consideration the fact that we're talking about splitting up a department of sworn law enforcement officers that all do the same work. They're upholding the law. It's the same job. It's the same job title. They're in the same pay band. Everything. And so it just happens to be that these 20 individuals' names are filed with the compensation board and the other 16 are not. And so if we can't do an annual type of thing, I would just ask that you would consider at least making the sheriff's office whole
option
in this
two
process.
At
the bare,
at
the
bare,
bare
minimum.
That's my ask. So.
Well,
why are the other 16 not considered by the state? Because we have too many of them?
No, ma'am.
Can I speak to that?
Okay.
Yes.
Yes, Sheriff.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Ms. Eager, the compensation board provides one deputy per 1,500 in the population. Hopefully with the census and if the state has the money, they might provide more. But that's the general rule of thumb for how they dish those out. How do we determine who is on our list for compensation board? We go by seniority. People who have been there the longest go on that list. And, you know, it's it's not a fair system, but at least as a county, we're getting something from the state versus nothing. If you had a police department, you would get absolutely no money from the state whatsoever for your law enforcement and your dispatch.
So I agree with that. If they've been there, if they have the seniority, that's the way the state wants to do it.
I think we don't have a big speech or anything, but I think we've got to do forward.
And we're not making a decision tonight. This is to come back and make a decision on the 16th. Y'all presented us with four options, and we have to figure out which one of those four options. We have to do number one.
You have to do number one.
Okay? We can decide to do either two, three, four, if we would like as a board, and we'll make that decision on the 16th. I agree with you, Mr. Weaver. I don't like when the state does this stuff. Sometimes they do things that have tails. It's just like we talk about education all the time. When they give out raises and money for the state, they only do the standards of quality, the SOQ positions, which is not everybody that's a teacher. How they figure those formulas out?
Who said life is fair? But this is a time to work with the budget. Then if you want raises for teachers and personnel, you do it during budget time. And we're talking about, historically, we're so short in money that we can't pay for a lot of fire equipment and everything we're talking about. We're in debt, what, $2 million we need extra? And we have this extra money. We use it for what already there is a demand for right today.
What is the purpose and the definition when we talk about bonuses? What do you usually give a bonus for? There is a purpose. There's a motivator. There's
I think this is a state saying that they're going to do a hazardous duty pay thing. Some of these folks that are deputies showed up to work every day during the entire pandemic.
Right.
A lot of people, unfortunately, had to go on unemployment. They watched the federal government come up with a thing that on unemployment, you got half of your pay, plus you got $600 a week, which meant that people that were on unemployment sitting at home were bringing home more than some of our deputies. I wish that wasn't true, but it is. You know what, though? They showed up every day and did their job.
Yeah, and to go back to this, if you think about back at budget time, going back to last budget, prior to
we'll talk about that in new business.
Well, yeah.
We have given bonuses.
I was just hoping to present this that came down.
The board has given bonuses before.
And we had a reason behind why we wanted to. To me, this seems like the same kind of reasoning. It's a little bit different. It's like a little whipped cream on top of it. It's not something you just throw out there.
Like I said, this is
everybody.
This is not something we're making a decision on tonight. They've done a great job of presenting us the options. Mm-hmm. And this is something we get 2 weeks to think about, 2 weeks to discuss.
Well, we have full board, too.
And we'll have a full board next time. And, and for those that don't know, for those that don't know, Mr. O'Brien's not here tonight. His father passed away unexpectedly. Yep. And so please, those of you that are going to pray tonight, please keep his family in your thoughts and prayers. He's on his way to Spain as we speak to take care of the arrangements and everything else. So, but that will give us time, 2 weeks. We can chew on it. We can think about it. We can discuss it. Whatever. Mm-hmm. And on the 16th, we'll make a decision. Thank you so very much. You did a great job. All right. Here's another.
Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you, Jessica. All right. Redistricting 2021, Ms. Harris.
Put my other hat on.
Ms. Harris, let me know when you want me to go to the next slide or you can go. Yep, there you go.
Yeah, although I might not be paying attention. Good evening. Are we evening yet? Good afternoon, wherever we are. In response to a question Mrs. Booker asked about redistricting, you mentioned it. I don't know if you questioned it, but you mentioned it.
Yeah.
I have learned more about redistricting than I ever thought I would know.
Now you're an expert.
I'm not even close to being an expert yet. So the short answer is we really won't know anything until the census data comes out. That's the quick answer. But what we can do, I'm going to walk through just a little bit of this, to try and be prepared for when that census data does come. So to give everybody that quick overview, every 10 years, the county is required to do a reapportionment and redistricting. I love this. In the year ending in 1, following the decennial census, so that would be next year, in past, the census data has come a little earlier in the year. The last time it came in February. We're not expecting it before May 1st. The state code and constitution lays out what districts must be, how you must do it, and how they must be compact, contiguous, and clearly observable boundaries. Since you've walked through that one time before, you know what that's like. I think, Mr. Weaver, you were part of that as well.
A couple of them.
So they're also required to apply the equal population standard. And this year, it was written into code that you must use the census data from the most recent decennial. Let's see, I'm getting ahead of myself. The other new thing this year, or in 2021, is that while the incarcerated population is included in the total census data numbers, the Department of Legislative Services, or Division of Legislative Services, will adjust those figures to remove the incarcerated population from our population totals. New this year, the incarcerated persons will be counted at their home address on the day that they were incarcerated. Right. So they'll be counted in their home counties or cities.
So my district will shrink.
Your district is shrinking by a lot.
Because the women's north of my district is the prison.
The women's prison.
So my district's going to go.
We don't have
from
enough.
Here. It's going to go to about.
You have a little horseshoe anyway.
Let me get there.
All right, Ms. Harris. I don't want to steal her thunder.
I can distract myself because we won't have a lot of Cubanians in prison.
Is our song
okay? I can distract myself.
I do.
Thank you. So just as a broad overview, so the 2020 decennial census was the enumeration was completed October 2020. There is a statutory mandate that that information is presented to the President of the United States by December 31st of 2020, and another statutory requirement that it is delivered to states by April 1st of 2021, not 2020. The legislature has decreed that the Division of Legislative Services then has 30 days to get it in the hands of the localities, so we're looking at around May 1st. County staff, with input wherever it's needed, will then look at that, and with the redistricting committee, we'll make the recommendations to the board, then we hold public meetings and public hearings, and an ordinance to adopt the redistricting plan. But prior to that data release, there are some projections. I'm going to walk through one quickly here. We can do that. We can do the projections. The redistricting committee can be appointed, and we can create a timeline for the public information meetings. After the data release, we'll reconcile the population projections with the census data that we receive. The redistricting committee will recommend the redistricting plan. We'll advertise for public information meetings and hearings, and then you'll adopt a redistricting plan. Oh, sorry.
Let me hit that admit really quick. Here, someone's trying to come in. Sorry.
Didn't realize we'd be fighting each other on that one. So after we receive the population, the actual data, and we reconcile our projections, that's when the magic happens. What is that magic? I don't really know right now, but it's going to be, I'm guessing, a pretty frantic time of trying to come up with a redistricting plan that works. One also new thing this year is we do not have to have Department of Justice pre-clearance for this. That's been stricken from the requirements. And what was the next thing there?
So will the state have redrawn the lines by then?
For the yeah. state lines? Yeah,
I was looking at the eighth.
Yeah, I was looking at their timelines earlier today, looking at election, primaries and the general election for next year. And I've seen some conflicting dates. One of them gave the state one day to get their maps created and approved, but then I also saw that they have 23 days. So either way, they're going to be working on a very tight timeline. But by the time you receive the data, yeah. they should have redrawn those.
So hopefully we won't have two people representing.
Hopefully we won't. You know, if you remember back to when we were yeah. talking about the county boundaries, we have some work there too.
I just hope we don't have a bunch yeah. of letters going out from the registrar. Because they're disputing what district people are supposed to vote in. That's my biggest thing. If we're split, we're mm-hmm. split. But I just hope we don't have people that all of a sudden are told, you got to vote somewhere else.
So there's another requirement that we not have any of those that's written into it, this year, that each district has to be fully within one
yeah.
house of district. So really quickly here, this is... we did some projections. Jason Overstreet and I worked on some projections for population. So we took the population from 2010, and he did this magic. A household equals 2.58 people. I don't know where those 5.58 are, but 2.58 people. So using that, we added up all of the building permits that have been issued since 2011, January 2011 until November 24th of this year, and there's been 1,081 building permits. Taking that and multiplying it by 2.58, mm-hmm. we projected population at 27,447.
All right, yes. I don't want to throw a wrench in this, but and Ms. Booker, yes ma'am, I do care that whether or not we have Louisiana residents. But does that mean that, let's assume all 1,200 inmates are from other counties besides Louisiana,
yeah.
then we lose them all, so that number needs to shrink by 1,200.
So if you notice to the far right, the loss or growth in yep. each of the districts would be based on the building permits. And this
the prison
is not included in the 2021 projected population. It is included in the 2010 population total because it was still included
right.
at that time. So you can see pretty easily that there's going to be some work required to get the district's population evenly applied. Columbia is the largest deviation from what the ideal district size is. Palmyra and Cunningham had a lot of growth, so they're skewing it in the other direction. Mm-hmm. Rivanna stayed put because they can't go very far.
Rivanna district is almost built out.
Talking about the district, we're talking about right now five. As I recall, you had choices of 5 through 7,
yeah.
and you broke them up into mm-hmm. different areas and looked at those.
Yeah.
And you know, we might not have to be tied down to these numbers per se.
No, that would certainly be one way to
yes.
change them to.
When would we have to do that by?
So that's where the dates get a little bit TBD across the board, without knowing when we're going to get that data, without having the data to
the census data.
The census data to really be able to reconcile our projections with that. I really don't know how we would get closer. We can run all That's, sorts of data.
Because here's my next question. If we go to 6 or 7, like Mr. Weaver has talked about, when will we have to have that done in order to have the election? Because Mr. Weaver, Mr. O'Brien, and I are up for re-election next year.
Yes, and then if you're talking about adding two additional, and there are
one additional,
yeah, whatever it is.
And so the sometimes you may be drawn out of your district.
Correct.
And you may not be in Columbia anymore.
Right.
You may be in Fauquier.
So the fun part
or you might be in district A or district B.
So the fun fun part is now factoring in the 45-day early voting, because that pushes back the deadlines for having this done. So I was looking at what the legislative deadlines are, and for the, I think it's the August primaries, they have a 99-day backup for when things have to be approved.
From August?
So right now, it looks like there will be March primaries, June primary, and then August primary, and November general election.
Great.
That's a lot of work.
Well, we had March and June and November.
We lost our minds.
August for the House.
And remember, all of these, you have 45-day early voting, too.
So the August ones are in response to the House district lines being redrawn, and that was the earliest that they...
Did you say March?
There will be March, and those will be...
That's our first meeting. They'll start early voting for the March primary.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, like I said, they don't think ahead. I mean,
no, sir. Not one bit. They just make decisions.
They
don't realize...
They don't know where it falls.
The ramifications or the coattails.
They don't have to put up with it.
That's our job, people.
And then
So just a few considerations, because there's going to be a lot more than this. But for now, Columbia District will lose population equal to the incarcerated population. On census day, April 1st, there were 1,033 incarcerated persons there. That number is less now, but I think we do have to use the census day population. As Mr. Weaver pointed out, the board can increase, decrease, or maintain the current number of voting districts. This is the fun part. District population reapportionment must be plus or minus 5%. We also found today, Jason Overstreet and I, that the total deviation can only be 10%. There are some special... ask for a waiver. That's not what it's called.
What do you mean total deviation?
So I don't think I have it.
Well, I know we already just said mine. I'm losing 22%.
Right. Well,
of my
that's
district.
What yours has to be pretty significantly.
So you had to draw into another area so to get you more people.
Sure. And if I take from you,
so you will be far. You get from Union, and
let's see. I don't have it there. Back when the 2011 redistricting was done, they weren't within that 10% deviation. Mm-hmm. There was one that was 9 point something or other, and another that was 3 point or 4.5. So there was a 14% deviation. So we don't know why. I don't know if you had to ask for a special waiver or how that worked. But we got these numbers by working off of an ideal 5-district county with 5,489 residents per district. That's how we came up with these projections. Mm-hmm. So if you change that to 6, you can do all kinds of fun things.
6, we don't want.
Seven would be a much more. So we've already talked about, or I've already rambled on about some of these considerations. We've got 4 potential elections in the coming year with all of the ramifications of early voting. This is just to show you what happened in 2000. So that's the 2001 to 2010 district map, and then the 2011 to 2020, where we are currently. And you can see how much area Cunningham lost. Fork Union grew. Columbia did its little slide up.
Columbia lost because the district above the river. Yep. She took the area above the river. Yep. There's not many houses there.
Yeah, here was the river before. Yeah. Well, here's the river, not before. It's still there.
But you can see it went up to whatever that road is.
Palmyra. Stage Junction Road. Yeah. It went to Stage Junction Road.
And then
it makes
a little divot down around Columbia, I'm a data nerd, but I'm in love with this.
I tell you, community planning people are key to doing this kind of stuff.
So, we're really fortunate. Jason Overstreet has done this several times and at the district level of DPC. So, he's going to be really, really useful. So that's just to show you, and it will probably change what
it looks. And we're not picking the committee tonight.
No,
this is just kind of, yeah.
No, that was my mouth.
Yeah. That was just to kind of give you just kind of an idea of, you know, looking at how the districts have changed and how some things may change a little bit within districts, and just to get the board to start thinking a little bit about, you know, do they want to keep it at five? Do they want to change the number of districts?
So I gave you a handout of all of my slides, and then Jason prepared this sort of summary sheet as well. And the red and green just shows the over under of who needs to gain population and who needs to maybe lose a little bit of population. So
we already have 3/4 of the county, and if we stay at five, we'll have 80% of the county land mass
area
in our two districts.
Yeah. Well, I'm nowhere in your district.
Well, we do that.
And remember, this information is based upon, you know, just the methodology of projection using housing permits. And you know, we'll get more concrete information.
That doesn't count all the new housing.
Correct.
It counted everything through November 24th.
Correct.
What's going to happen after
that? Yes.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at possibly having 400 houses built in the next year and a half, two years.
Yep.
All right. Thank you so much. That was wonderful, Ms. Harris. We'll now go forward with the consent agenda. J, minutes of November 18, 2020. K, FY21 Fluvanna County Public Schools grants supplemental appropriation, Ms. Gill. L, FY21 Fluvanna County Public Schools grants supplemental appropriation, Ms. Gill. M, FY21 Sheriff's Department insurance claim, 2015 Ford F-150, VIN number 4224. N, FY21 Sheriff Department Insurance Claim, 2018 Dodge Charger, VIN number 3232. Is there anything we need to pull?
Not for me.
Ms. Eager?
No, that's fine.
Okay, do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve the consent agenda J through N.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. Weaver, second by Ms. Booker. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. Now, we will go forward with unfinished business. O, local allocations for federal CARES coronavirus relief funds. Mr. Dahl.
I only have that on there as kind of a standing thing, unless the board has anything they want to talk about. We don't have any projects that we're trying to get done. We had one ionization project with HVAC stuff we were going to try and get done, but just from a contractual standpoint and a timing standpoint, we just couldn't do it. So we're kind of at the end of CARES funds, so unless the board has anything.
Well, okay, don't have anything, but might have to add another item under unfinished business, because what we talked about earlier, I think, is a continuation from February.
Okay.
Alrighty, I brought this up in February. And I know Mr. Weaver's blood pressure is not high enough, so if I need to be quiet, you tell us to be quiet, Mr. Weaver.
Okay.
But I'm going to say
it. Is this a new business?
It's a continuation of what I said I was going to bring up in February. In February, I believe it was, we agreed on a budget last year, and we had a 3% raise in. We did what we thought was right, and I still think what we did was correct. We pulled that 3% back because nobody knew what was going on with the coronavirus and everything else. But I also said then I will try to revisit this in December to talk about possibly reinstating the 2% raise that we pulled back. And I just wanted to bring that up. If we could possibly discuss that in December, the second meeting of December. I don't think this is doing something out of budget cycle. It was done in budget cycle. We pulled it back because we said we don't know what's going on. We were talking about losing at least 10%, if not more, in sales tax revenue. So we were afraid our revenues were not going to get in. So this is just something I'd like to discuss, putting it back.
That should be put in the new budget, you know, as to what.
Well, I
what
think
we
had it last budget, and then we only pulled it out because the country shut down in March because of the coronavirus. I mean, we had agreed to doing the 3%, had it already done.
Well, it
was a done
been
deal.
Approved, per se.
Well,
we discussed it and probably close to it, but there was never a vote taken on it.
Right. We had to budget where we thought we were going to end up, and then we pulled back because we wanted to make sure we kept some unallocated money just so we'd have money in the general fund, I believe. Correct?
Well, when the board approved the budget, I mean, we... And Mary, correct me if I'm wrong. We pulled back the tax rate, or we changed some of the expenditures that we did we not?
On the budget?
Yeah.
Well, we took out the extra 2%. We
were a little more conservative on revenue
sales tax.
On our revenue. Now, I can tell you, I looked today, and the first quarter sales tax of this year, starting in July, is $25,000 above what it was last year. And last year was a good year. But it is only $25,000 above, but it's above. It's still up. Honestly, we're having the CAFR presentation, hopefully next meeting. They're still working on it. They've had some computer problems with the audit department. But anyway, so we should be having that presentation the second week, or the second meeting in December. We are not going to have tax numbers until the 1st of January to lay the late fees. So more than likely, we're going to see people paying after the 7th and up until the 30th.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the best choice, and certainly it's just my opinion, would be to do it the first meeting in January, because by
maybe
then,
second, because that's that organizational.
Okay, second meeting. Maybe revisit it in January, because by then we'll have our actual tax numbers of what we collected for the first half of the year, as well as 3 more months of sales tax.
Yeah,
I think that's going to give us a better picture of where we're at. I
just wanted to bring this up because I said I was going to bring it up
8 months
ago.
More accurate numbers if you do it in January.
We'd be better off to wait till the second meeting in January to discuss it.
I would, because then we'll have our first half of tax collections and we'll know better where we're at with revenue.
Okay. Alrighty. I just wanted to bring that up and just let folks know that I was going to talk about it. Anybody else have anything on their unfinished business? You okay?
No. Here I am.
I told you. All right. Now finish unfinished business. How about you? Good thing.
Do we ever check on Mr. Thomas Pace's concerns? Did he have guns?
Yeah, I've talked to Sheriff Hess, and I think Sheriff Hess is near Major Wells, and okay. they were checking into some data, looking to see what reports have been made. The one thing that was relayed that I think, and that even Mr. Pace said, is Fluvanna County, and I think he said Greene County does not have any type of gun ordinances as far as where you can and cannot shoot. And,
yeah. Well, the state has some.
Oh,
you can't shoot in the road.
Correct.
Right. There are some regulations on that.
Yes, and I think from what unless those individuals that were doing anything that was unlawful, you know, unless you know the sheriff's department or the forest warden catches it, you know, during the act, I'm not sure what we can do at this point unless the board decides that they want to change some type of gun ordinances in the county for what people can do. Mm-hmm. So.
And just didn't want us to overlook that.
No, no.
Look. The case, you know, at least he took the time to itemize everything for us to make it very clear, although he did a verbal concern as well.
Yeah, but I provided the sheriff's office, you know, with the information, the street, the subdivision, they were doing some research into it, and I just, they provided a little information. I just need to get back into it.
Okay.
Yep.
All righty. Anything else? Is there any new business? All right. Hearing none, I will now open the second round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board, please step to the microphone, state your name, address, keep your comments to 5 minutes, on topic and directed to the board. Does anyone wish to speak this time? Do we have anyone? If you'd like to raise your hand and you're on the phone, you can press *9. I forgot to read that direction earlier.
Chief Ailey's on, but I don't know if he wants to speak.
Chief Ailey, did you want to speak?
He's not coming
Okay, not coming on. I'll now close this first second round of public comment. And Mr. Weaver, I guess you're doing the honors tonight.
Doing the honors. Mr. Chair, I move the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A-6, Investment of Funds, Section 2.2-3711A.8, Legal Matters, the Code of Virginia, 1950, as amended for the purpose of discussing investment of funds and legal matters.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. We are in closed session. Thank y'all for coming out.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that, to the best of each member's knowledge, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A-8 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, and considered in the meeting. A second and a recorded vote needed.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1. We are now out of closed session. Mr. Winkler, I don't want to put any pressure on you, but if we're going to be here for more than an hour, then we need to vote to extend. Do we need to vote to extend our meeting?
I don't believe so, sir, as long as there's not a lot of questions. I don't believe so.
Okay, go ahead. Y'all can, Ms. Johnson?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Can you hear
go
me?
Ahead and open y'all's meeting, ma'am.
Well, I'll call this meeting of the Fluvanna County School Board to order. May we have a roll call, please, Mr. Winkler?
Yeah, I think Ms.
Ms. Johnson?
There you go.
Ms. Johnson?
Yes.
Ms. Stewart?
Yes.
Mr. Pullen? Dr. Kelly?
Yes.
Mr. Rittenhouse? Madam Chair? I think we're good.
Thank you, Ms. Kreitzer. I should have known you were here. I beg your pardon for that. We'll go ahead and move on to reports from the superintendent, please.
Hey, as always, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Board of Supervisors, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak tonight and to talk and entertain any questions you may have as we begin to look at our preliminary budget for the next fiscal year. At this particular point, I'd like to defer to my board to see if they have any opening comments. And I don't mean to put anyone on the spot. If you don't, that's certainly fine. I can take it here. But I'll start with the chair. Ms. Johnson, did you want to say anything before we started?
Certainly, thank you. This is very, very preliminary presentation. And as usual, we put our heart and soul in the very first things that we give you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Ms. Stewart, any opening remarks?
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stewart. And Dr. Kelly?
No, defer to Ms. Johnson. That's great.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Dahl, do you have our presentation? I believe either Ms. Kreitzer and or Ms. Gillum sent it over last week or earlier this week.
Do you want to go, Mr. Chairman, do you want to go and do as we're going into the work session, what we normally do, we do the call order and pledge of allegiance.
Oh, my apologies.
No,
yes.
That's all right.
Yes,
we can. I mean, I'm just going to continue.
If you want to do that,
continue.
We can
just
do that.
Continue.
We can
meeting.
Do that. We can certainly do that.
Yeah.
I've got everything linked up, ready to go. So
I got to drive a school bus.
Yep. And Mr. Winkler, if you just let me know when you want me to move to the next slide, I'd be happy to do so.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Dahl. Just overall, again, I'm just so appreciative of our relationship with the Board of Supervisors, with the school board, and myself and Mr. Dahl, and the opportunity to sit down. And as Ms. Johnson said, our numbers and our thoughts right now as we look at the budget during this pandemic are preliminary. We don't know what's going to be coming out of Richmond, certainly with the governor's budget. Hopefully we'll know within the next couple of weeks and before we close for winter break. And when we get some more definitive numbers, obviously, we'll be making some changes. You'll see that in large part more from the compensation piece, just as we are looking at the staff, hoping to be able to compensate our staff for all their hard work. But the first thing I'm going to point out is some of our bigger points of pride. Certainly, there are many points of pride, even amongst the year where we've been living in a pandemic. The first one, and one that I continue to be able to celebrate every year, is we are one of 19 school divisions that be fully accredited for 7 years in a row, and extremely proud of all the hard work from our staff and more importantly, our students. Our on-time graduation rate continues to be one of the best in the state, and our dropout rate continues to be one of the lowest in the state. So I'm very proud of the efforts at the high school, but that starts when students enter school in pre-K. Last year, we've had a number of students do well. We had 35 students receive AP Scholar Awards, and I just, I still have the banner, but I presented this banner to the school board and to the high school last week, recognized Savannah County High School as one of the best high schools in the country by U.S. News and World Report. Next slide, please. Thank you. This is just a look at where our other dollars go when it comes to salary and compensation for staff, and this will be for FY21 and FY22. When you look at the Virginia Retirement System, the VRS professional staff, it's 16.62%. For VRS non-professional, it's 4.08. And then there's a retired healthcare credit, and that goes for all full-time employees at 1.21. The healthcare credit for non-professional is 0.55. The group life is 1.34, and that is for everyone. So the total VRS from a professional standpoint is, that includes the retired healthcare credit and the group life, is 19.17. But then you have to add FICA on top of that. So basically for every dollar, for every dollar we're spending, for every 100% we're spending, or every 100 pennies we're spending, we're also spending 26.82 pennies for additional benefits under VRS and FICA. And for non-professional staff, it equates to 13.62 pennies, or 13.62% on 100% rate.
Can I ask
any questions on that slide?
Yeah. Which one do the bus drivers fall under, Mr. Winkler?
Non-professional staff.
Down at the bottom, 13.62?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. And I think Ms. Gillum's on our other staff would be cafeteria, would fall under that. Who all falls under that, Ms. Gillum?
Cafeteria and maintenance.
Okay.
Bus shop, mechanics.
Thank you, Ms. Gillum. And again, you have a preliminary number here looking at per pupil expenditure over the years. Thanks to you all, we continue. That continues to spike up. I see the slight spike in 2020, but here's what we're looking at spending this year and then projected for 2021, the $13,500. And that's strictly, tell them how that is calculated, Ms. Gillum, please.
The projected one is just flat out taking the budget, if you spent all the money and divided it by the current enrollment. But when they calculate the true per pupil expenditures, there are some capital expenses and some other things that they pull out of that calculation. So it's very preliminary, but it gives you a general idea.
Yes, ma'am. Thank
you. Why such a difference between 11 and 13?
I imagine that's because of going with the drop in student population this year. Going from 11,185 to 13,500? Does that have something to do with the drop in population?
Yes, sir. Right now we're down about 200 students, so that would drive the majority of that per pupil expenditure.
Okay.
We're cognizant of that. Our ADM, our average daily membership, is down. As I said, Ms. Gillum said, it's closing in on about 200 students. If nothing falls out of Richmond, if they don't hold us harmless from the ADM standpoint, we're looking at a possible loss of state funds as much as $1 million. I don't want to alarm you. We do not believe that this is going to happen. We have no reason to believe other than the number drop itself. All the communications coming out of Richmond right now is the General Assembly is well aware of this. They're well aware of this. It's happened across the Commonwealth, mainly because a lot of students not only have turned to virtual, but they've turned to outside a public school setting from a virtual standpoint. But our ADM, our average daily membership, is down, I think it's 157, and it ticks up about every week or so by about a student. We're monitoring that very, very closely, and my board is well aware of it as well. Yes, ma'am.
Do you know where the 100-and-some students are? Is it homeschooling, going to other private schools? Do you keep up with that?
Yes, ma'am. We keep all the trends with that, to the best of our knowledge. And it's mixed, Ms. Booker. Most of them right now have chose the homeschool, but other private schools and other virtual schools. K-12 Virtual Virginia has probably been, I don't want to call them the culprit, but they have probably pulled the most students across the Commonwealth into one private sector of a virtual learning platform.
And Mr. Chair, just one.
There's another large part. Our ADM is down in the biggest. It's in kindergarten. There is a waiver out in the state of Virginia for 1 year that parents don't have to send their students to kindergarten. So we're down 50 to 60 kids from what we projected last year coming into kindergarten. That's why we're projecting an uptick the following year. We believe we could have as many. Our trend lines over the last 4 or 5 years have been somewhere around 220 to 230 students in kindergarten. We believe there could be as many as 250 to 260 kids in kindergarten next year. They're just keeping their kids at home.
Yeah. And that ADM loss that Mr. Winkler talked about $1 million, there's this letter that came out by VACO today, the Virginia Association of Counties, going to the Governor Northam as the General Assembly goes into budget deliberations, is to make sure that they hold localities harmless for that loss of ADM.
And I think some of the private schools in the county have picked up quite a few kids. Mm-hmm. I know the Light Academy's picked up a bunch, and I, doing behind the wheel, I see a bunch of them. Parents at FUMA has picked up a bunch.
So on this slide, you just see where we compare to the state, and you'll see their FY19 numbers. That's because of the numbers are always a year or two behind we're getting from the state. But you can look at the comparison and then how our money is broken down from the locality versus sales tax, state and federal. And the gray area largely obviously dependent on the LCI. So henceforth, Goochland's number is so high, they're at 0.80. Any questions on this slide?
Are we going to get a hard copy of this presentation?
We can give you a hard copy.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea. We used to get it, you know.
Yeah.
Mr. Weaver, if I was there, sir, I'd have brought you personally a hard copy. I'm sorry, sir.
Good.
But we'll make sure you all get hard copies, absolutely.
Thank you.
Any questions on this slide? Thank you. Just look at our categorical budget over the last couple of years and where we're spending our money. And you can see I'm very proud of the work that the school board has continued to do and actually enforce and request as we continue to look strongly at instruction and make sure we're spending well over the majority of money in instruction, and very happy to see a continued uptick there.
Is technology considered instruction?
Yes, to a certain degree, but you'll see a technology component here. I'm pointing at, like, you can see what I'm talking about. Ms. Gillum, why don't you expand on the technology piece that's gray versus the technology piece that would be in the gold?
Sure. So some of the technology expenses are related to things like servers or we also charge like postage, copier leases, and those sorts of things to technology labs. But in the past 2 years, we've moved the purchase of like instructional technology that would be computers for students and things like that into the instructional category.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Gill. Any other questions from a categorical standpoint? Next slide, please. And this look at our enrollment, and I've already addressed, again, I'm circling on my computer, I'm so sorry, I've already addressed that preliminary 2021. That number was right on the money as of 2 weeks ago. Again, I think it's had a slight downtick. I think we're at 245 when I looked at it. The big numbers are in September count and our March count, and that's what our money will be based on. But as you heard Mr. Dahl speak, we already are getting some good information and good support coming out of Richmond to address this drop in average daily membership across the Commonwealth. We are not alone. I don't know a school system, particularly a rural school system, not majorly affected in their ADM because of the pandemic. And again, a large portion of our hit, and we were projecting 34.15, so that FY22, I think, is actually going to uptick a little bit more than that. A large portion of that is our kindergarten number right now. I think we're about 160, aren't we, Ms. Gillum, when we were projecting 220?
Yes, sir.
So you're going to
any questions
staff?
About her? I'm sorry.
You're going to have to cut staff?
I'm sorry, Ms. Booker, I didn't hear that.
Are you going to have to cut staff?
Yes, ma'am. We are down. I mentioned the loss in potential ADM funds. We have had a reduction in staff. In the past, we've had 12 kindergarten teachers. We have 10 this year.
Okay.
We did not have to RIF anyone. We actually lost those positions through attrition. Third grade, for example, we had a staff member request a year's leave of absence. We granted that. And then we did not fill the position because the numbers were down. Next slide, please. And here's our enrollment broke down. And you can see in the above line of where we were trending in the past at West Central, and that's basically our kindergarten numbers and where we are now. And I honestly believe this 250 is probably a little bit lower for 21-22. I would not be surprised to see that hit the 260 mark. Those kids went somewhere, and I believe, I'm going to say, when the pandemic ends, whatever that looks like, those kids will come back to us. I don't see any reason why they wouldn't. Traditionally, we have an uptick in third grade, and then again in middle school, when they come into middle school, and then there's another uptick from homeschool, private schools, when they get to the high school. Any questions about our numbers from where we are projected to where we are? Again, you see the biggest impact coming at the lower grade levels. Okay, next slide, please. This is just a look at local composite index and where we are compared to other localities and where we have been over the last basically 6 years.
Where are we now? 41?
39.
Yeah, 39, 40, sir. And remember, it's on a two-year lag.
Right, sure.
It's based off of data 2 years prior.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Next slide, please. So here are unknowns. Right now, our health insurance rates are solid. We did have to raise rates this year considerably in some areas, depending on what tier folks were on. The board did agree to move some more money. We are self-insured still. We don't have, we've looked at some trend data and over the last year and a half. So we have some speculative data of where we'll be in the spring. And we're talking with our insurance provider and our third party administrator, BPA. We just continue to monitor our claims. We've had a couple of large claims this past year. We actually lost a Fluco that had some large claims. And from a personal standpoint, I've been praying. That's been weighing on my heart. Insurance rates, when you're in the insurance business from a self-insurance, they're unknown. But I believe we have the board commitment as of right now to stay the course, continue to monitor. We're not going to go out to RFP this year. If our rates strike up again, I would imagine that we would go out to RFP for the following year. State budget allocations, we should know more with just in a couple of weeks. I think the governor's budget is due. I'm flipping over the calendar, I'm sorry. Is due to us somewhere around the 16th to the 18th. So I'm hopeful, again, right before we close for the winter break, we'll have a preliminary budget number. Just looking at the cost of living from a VRS standpoint at 1.8, where that would fit into compensation. There's also some unknowns within the SOQs. There's not a lot of dialogue coming out of Richmond right now to change SOQs because of budgetary implications. If you'll remember this time last year, we had a possible $750,000 add because of changes in the standards of quality, adding guidance counselors, adding assistant principals, adding reading specialists, etc. We've left those in the preliminary budget, but it's an unknown right now. But I don't see any true traction in Richmond to change those drastically from the General Assembly right now. I hope I'm right and not wrong with that assumption. From a special ed population, even though our ADM is down, our special ed population continues to grow. And as you know, if the right special ed student moves into your district, it could increase your cost by $70,000 just by having to add a teacher. And then again, the FY22 enrollment. We are optimistic that our numbers will go up as compared to this year. Questions on our unknowns?
Where is the growth in special ed? What categories?
It's really all over the place. We've done a great job with Abrams and having some folks to kind of bring our out-of-county back. We count the 504 number, but you can't count it from a monetary standpoint. We count that, so we're getting more 504s.
Yes.
Honestly, it's probably in the LD population is probably the biggest growth.
Thank you.
Our ESL population continues to rise, too. When I started here, and I should have the exact number today, but I remember when I started here 10 years ago, it was 42, and I think it's pushing 100 now. Ms. Field, do you know the exact number? ESL? I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
It's approaching 100. Not all of those kids get services, but they've all been identified as
right.
ESL.
Right.
What does that stand for, ESL?
English as a second language. Yes.
English as a second language.
Yeah, I was going to say our numbers have risen quite a lot at the middle school.
And that was actually a change in the SOQs for last year, suggested change. It was just changing the number ratio per 100 or per 50 kids that had to hire another teacher. But right now we're good in that, and we have some wonderful ESL teachers. Any other questions from the unknowns? Okay, next slide, please. So here's what we're looking at in the discussions that we've had with the board. We had an initial seminar about a month ago, and we're going to continue to address this at every month and have a solidified number by February for you. But just looking at what type of compensation increase we can have for staff, and Ms. Gillum and her team, I can't commend her enough, is dynamite. If she's given a task, she starts running the numbers. So anywhere from about 425, which is a step only, to a step plus 1% is about $700,000. I wish I had an exact number, but the board hasn't made a solid commitment as far as, and I don't mean that in a bad way, I mean that they're wanting us to explore as many options as we can. I believe in compensating staff, and we should try to do everything we can for them. So it's to be determined. But the lowest amount we would ask for right now, I believe, would be a step increase, and that would equate to about $425,000. Health insurance premiums for us, I'm hopeful that they will remain level, but looking at some claims recently, I'm just not 100% sure. The board did commit to adding $400,000 from money last year into the claim bucket. That helped, but we still had to increase individual premiums. The biggest thing that I'm concerned about dealing with the pandemic is our students that are falling behind. There were already gaps, and we knew this, but those gaps, and we're aware of that as we're starting to assess students this fall, have grown exponentially in some cases, particularly at our lower levels, and I'll say all the way up to K-5. And I'm looking at the gaps in reading and mathematics. We know we're going to have to address this now and continue in the future for the next few years. So it is our hope to be able to add and put those teachers to work with students, whether it be in small groups, one-on-one, to help our other teachers coordinate those efforts. Two additional reading specialists, One of those would go toward the middle school. The other one would go to Carysbrook. That way Carysbrook would have a reading specialist for each grade level, and the middle school would have one for our low-level readers in both, fifth and sixth grade. It's not to say they wouldn't work with seventh graders. They would with those students that would be identified more than likely in 2 years below grade level. And another math specialist. Currently, we have one math specialist, K-12. We would break it up K-7 or a K-5, but having the transition from the middle school, we just have a different dynamic because in our middle school, having 5, 6, and 7. Most traditional middle schools are 6, 7, and 8. So those folks would share some middle school kids, but we're hoping to add a middle school math specialist or a secondary math specialist to help us out with those students that are falling behind. The other thing we have to be concerned about is the social and emotional learning gap. The social worker, currently we have one social worker for the county. She's wonderful. We desperately need another one to help out with our students. Is that just a typo right there that got carried over, Ms. Gillum? I see one additional social worker and one additional social worker.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I mean, I want to run the numbers to make sure we didn't want something else. I know we talked about a guidance counselor as well. Two reading specialists would be 70.
If I may, I think the other things that I'm not saying this represents the board writ large in terms of priorities, but I will say that the discussion also included whether or not we had sufficient coverage related to guidance counselors and school psychologists. Again, focusing on the needs related to COVID and the gaps that ultimately, and the trauma, to be frank, produced by what we're going through. So I won't say that that is everybody's opinion, but those were items that were at least discussed.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Dr. Kelly. And anytime I'm representing this, these are preliminary numbers, again, from the staff compensation piece, the needs that we have created from the pandemic, the needs that we have within our children, whether it be social, emotional, or from the academic standpoint. I'm not speaking for any one person on the board or even the board as a whole. This is what we presented. This is what we've talked about. We haven't hammered them out from a priority standpoint. I am worried about, again, the health insurance premiums. I am worried about the ADM and trying to make that number up this year. So these aren't in any type of priority. These are just preliminary numbers of what we would be looking at. If you were wanting a number from a placeholder standpoint, and I know you're not asking for that, but I'm just thinking out loud. I would say health insurance premium, what we did last week, we put $400,000. So if we put $400,000 in that place and we went on the high end of all of these things, you would be looking at $400,000 for the health insurance premiums, $300,000 for the additional staff at $700,000. And then if we were able to get the money via the state, via the locality, I'd like to go step plus 1%. And another $700,000, so it would be 1.4. I am optimistic, but I'm not naive. I realize that cannot come on the burden of the taxpayers of Cleveland County. We're going to have to need some help from the state, the feds, and others. So, but just to put some numbers in place there for you, because I see the estimated cost of TBA, that's what we'd be looking at out. And it's not necessarily a wish list. Those staffing, I believe those staffing concerns right there are true needs and will be huge needs for us next year and for a few years to come as we close the gaps due to the pandemic. Any questions from this? Yes, ma'am.
Have you thought about, since we've had to not have school, having special summer school for children who need help with reading or math?
Yes, ma'am. And we haven't had the traditional summer school in Fluvanna for at least the last 5 years. We have discussed that, ma'am, but not knowing if the pandemic is going to truly end and allow us to open up a summer school as we've done it in the past, we haven't had any plans, solid plans in the place, but we've already had some discussions about that, about will we be able to have summer school next year? Because certainly there would be a need for that, and would we be able to get the attendance? But hoping that the pandemic will be done by then and allow us to make that happen.
Could you do a virtual
summer
school?
Did you get that?
We could, Ms. Booker. And I think I addressed this a little bit when we had a chance to speak the other day. Just my biggest concern from a virtual platform is truly our young learners, and I'll identify the K-3. it's so hard when a student is already behind the eight ball and is a year behind, or when they get to third grade, possibly 2 years behind, to close that gap from a virtual perspective. When you think about the phonics approach and everything that has to go into early literacy, and the concept of word and grasping that, I'm not saying it can't be done, because I know there are programs out there, there are companies out there that claim to specialize in that. And we have some wonderful teachers making it happen each and every day. So could we do virtual summer school? Yes, absolutely. Would I guarantee that it was going to work for every child? No, I would not. I would think we would have to be very selective from a virtual summer school standpoint. And I'm not going to close my mind to that, but it won't be the end all and the be all to those gaps that are going to be created because of the pandemic.
How many, you said two additional reading specialists. How many do you have now?
We have three at West Central Central. So we have one per grade level, and we have one at Carysbrook. So we have four total.
Okay, and basically they work directly with the students, or do they work with the teacher and the students?
At the Carysbrook site, that reading specialist works more with the teachers, because she does work with students, directly with students, but she works more with the teachers designing lesson plans. There's just too many kids identified. At West Central and Central, because we have one per grade level, they're able to do a lot more small group work working directly with students. And that's what I'm trying to do here, is one of these, as you'll recall, one of these additional reading specialists would go to Carysbrook. So we would have one reading specialist working directly with third grade students and teachers, and one reading specialist working directly with fourth grade students and teachers. At the middle school, I would aim that reading specialist efforts more so at the fifth grade, and that's just because my mindset still sees elementary as a K-5 perspective in the middle school moving. But it doesn't mean if we had students behind the eight ball, or again, let's say two grade levels or more in sixth and seventh grade, that she couldn't pull them and work with them as well, or he, excuse me.
So does the reading get better as they advance in the high school?
No, I would love to have a reading specialist at the high school. The issue is, from an educational perspective, and it's the old adage, it's once you learn to read, you can read to learn. No, we have students that we're still sending to the high school 2 to 3 years behind grade level. By then, a lot of times some of those students have been identified and maybe over identified, so they're getting additional help, maybe from a special education teacher, maybe through a 504. I would love to have a reading specialist or two of reading specialists available at the high school level. I'd like to have more at the middle school. When I first came here, we had three at the middle school. In 2012 and 13, we cut back to one, and then we eventually cut all the reading specials out of the middle school.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions about the priorities? Next slide, I think I'm about done, but yes. Other questions?
Any others?
No, very good.
Thank you.
I'll turn it over again, because the board has seen this presentation and we condensed it, but I'd like to turn it over back over to the board chair and ask, not to put anybody on the spot, but Ms. Johnson, if she has any follow-up comments. Ms. Johnson?
I do not. Thank you for your time this evening.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Ms. Stewart, anything else to add? I lost Ms. Stewart. Dr. Kelly? Dr. Kelly, you were muted. I assume you said no, sir.
No.
I was trying to unmute Shirley. The irony. Shirley, go ahead, please.
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stewart. Dr. Kelly, do you have any closing comments?
Sir? Just that I appreciate the support. I know that, you know, the county has a lot on its plate and a lot to wrestle with, and we're all, you know, dealing with something new, novel, and detrimental, and I'm afraid that the youngest of us are sort of bearing that burden to a large extent. And so these things are hard but important. And so I I'm sure I can speak for the board in that we appreciate what you do for us, and thank you.
Nicely said, Dr. Kelly, and I would just reiterate those words. I'm Mr. Dahl, from our relationship to Mr. Chairman, our relationship, and all the members of the board, I am grateful, and it is a pleasure to serve as superintendent here in Fluvanna County Public Schools. But I'm grateful for the relationship, I'm grateful for the dialogue, and for the honest questions. If ever you have a question about anything we're discussing or talking about, please don't hesitate to reach out to me, and I'll do the best job that I can. Your board, and of course my board, has a lot of work to do, not knowing what's going to be coming out of Richmond, not knowing what funds are going to be cut. We're grateful for the support we've gotten this fall through the CARES Act and through the CARES Act money. You just gave us the money tonight. I have an opportunity to let my board know that, to help out with technology. And again, I am grateful for that. It will go to good use. It will go to help the children and the future of this county. So thank you so much. Thank you for your time tonight. Again, I'll entertain any questions, and if not, I wish you all a good evening.
Thank y'all for coming in and talking to us tonight. Ms. Johnson, if you'd like to close y'all's meeting.
I'll motion myself to adjourn the meeting. May I have a second?
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Meeting adjourned.
Likewise, do we have a motion to adjourn?
So made.
We have a second. Got a motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. Y'all have a lovely evening.
Yep.